Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Monday night. It's kind of getting to be a normal thing, as I've said, since we came full back from COVID. And I'm speaking about the bar I'm at. You know, I've had to rearrange my schedule. So Mondays for a little bit now is going to be the thing. But anyway, enough about me. We got a great weekend coming up with a big, big fight. Jermell Charlo versus Brian Castaño for the undisputed championship title at the junior middleweight division. We'll have a preview and prediction, you know, segment for that, of course. We're really looking forward to that fight. Speaking of things we were looking forward to, we thought last week, top to bottom, it was pretty damn entertaining of a card, right, on paper. And in the ring, Gilberto Ramirez, I'm talking about the Golden Boy DAZN card, Gilberto Ramirez slices and dices Sullivan Barrera. Jojo Diaz, Joseph Diaz Jr. bounces back with a quality win over Javier Fortuna. Zapata, an unbeaten prospect, just dominates an unbeaten prospect. And a variety of other things. There was a knockout, big knockout on the undercard. Estrada looked really, really good. So, yeah, it was a really, really fun card. So we're definitely going to start, like we normally do, in the ring with that recap. And then, like I said, we'll have the Castaño and Charlo fight preview and predictions. And, man, oh, man, since the last time we spoke, bad things happened. The post, this freaking Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder trilogy is not dead in the water, but it's postponed. It sounds like the first working date is October 9th. Wow, that is a disappointment. I really wanted to, the trilogy was going to happen. Okay, that's an interesting fight still to me at the heavyweight division. I know a lot of people are just kind of honing on, especially the second fight. And to an extent, I get that, but it does, beyond all the excuses a long time ago, beyond that, I was still looking forward to this fight. But as we know, Tyson Fury and members of his, you know, I've heard three, I've heard eight, you know, you see a lot of stuff. Obviously, the rumors swirled, too, the conspiracy theories swirled as well, but a lot of people in his camp testing positive for COVID-19, which shuts down the fight. And then, of course, when it goes to rescheduling, I mean, you know, you have to have the venue available. And why would you, you know, put it right next to Pacquiao and Spence? August as well, Jake Paul in Woodley. You know, September is going to be Canelo, you know, hopefully fight Caleb Plant, but who knows who he's going to fight, I guess you could say, but he's going to fight. So it sounds like the first working date is, I've heard October 9th. Someone said October 2nd too on Boxing Twitter, but it is what it is. But, you know, first and foremost, just point blank, there's just no excuse for it. There's no excuse for for Tyson Fury on this. There just isn't. You can be a fanboy and make up excuses. You can be a fanboy for Wilder and come up with a bunch of conspiracy theories, whatever it is, okay? Obviously, with 2.5 weeks left or something like that, to come down with COVID, you know, they're blaming it on a sparring partner that came into the camp. Well, did he have to pass a test to get into the camp? We don't have much details, you assume. How many times in the last couple of weeks has Fury been tested? You know, it's really vague, man. It's really vague. And we've seen him in the public in general the last couple of months. He's been in Nevada. I mean, went to Miami for a little bit too, but he's been in Nevada, you know, training in Vegas. And really, when once this, you know, this arbitration came through in May and we knew that it's going to be the trilogy, Nevada at your home, to the gym, and back to your home. Gym home. Maybe that's what he mostly did, and he just caught it from somebody coming into the camp. But how often were you tested? You know, there are a lot of answers that need to be, or questions that need answers, right? There's not a lot of answers. We just know it's postponed. Some people are like, well, they haven't even said it's officially postponed. Well, you can't, you know, the tickets say it's postponed when you try to buy some tickets. It's postponed, but they wouldn't leave it lingering this long and then be like, you know what, forget it, it's on, you know. You feel bad, you know, for the fighters on the undercard. You feel bad for, I mean, to be honest with you, excuses, sure, plenty of them from Wilder, but Wilder had to sit there and fight for 6 months for this damn trilogy that he wanted, and now he's got to wait longer. And really the fans as well, the fighters on the undercard and the fans, because the fans book their ticket. You know, some of that stuff, people say, well, you can reschedule your flight. Well, maybe you can't come October 9th, and then you got to use this ticket credit in the next year. That's usually what they do. I don't know about every airline, but a lot of times when I've had to maneuver flights, it's like, yeah, okay, you got this credit for a year, you got to use it, you know. Sometimes through a travel agency, the whole, you know, combination of ticket and hotel is included, right? So, but like I said, there's been all sorts of speculation after that, you know, if they're faking it, you know, there's been a lot of talk he's faking it. He wasn't in shape. Just all sorts of stuff, right? And also some people saying, why don't they just push it back a week or two? And it just, like I said, I mean, Vegas is paying the promotional outfits to host the event there. That's what they're doing. So, and a lot of things are booked, and you don't want to run up a pay-per-view so close to another Pacquiao Spence. You know what I mean? So it makes sense that October 9th would be their first working date when you look at the schedule. So, and, you know, how can you schedule when you don't know when he's going to be done with it? Even if he doesn't have some kind of serious bout where, you know, it puts him in bed for a couple days, he's still got to test negative. And it's just so vague, you don't know when that is. You know, some people were talking about Chris Paul in the NBA and how he got COVID. Yeah, one, you can be on a minutes limitation when you come back, which you can't be in a limitation here, right? And you have a series to play in. It's not just one night, 12 rounds. You know, you can't just take 10 days off, 2 weeks off in a camp and expect to be 100%. It sucks. And like I said, there's really no excuse. They should have been testing better than, you know, maybe amping up the test so you're doing multiple per week. We don't really know if it was once a week, four times a week. I doubt it was four times a week. But it's just crazy to have a sparring partner come in. And we know there's false positives. You do hear a lot more about false positives than false negatives, if that makes sense. So you do get some of that. And then you just test, and you can do the rapid testing, which the rapid testing generally creates more of the false positives, unless there's been some new information on that. But that's what it's been pretty much the whole time. But But there are the 24-hour tests, you know, that you should be able to pass to get in the ring. You know, I don't know. We don't know. There's just a lot of vagueness. And they probably don't want to make a big announcement until they have it all booked. And obviously they're going to have to do some refunds. But, yeah, of course, speculation from a lot of the regular folks that this thing wasn't even, there was no ticket selling at all. For people that pay attention to fights, especially Vegas fights, because there is a hardcore fight fan base that waits until the ticket drops, sometimes till that Saturday, but the last week, of course. But a lot of people all of a sudden said, no, the tickets weren't selling anything. You can sit there and always talk about big fights being overpriced in Vegas. I get that. If that's your sole angle, that's cool. But there was talk about the tickets aren't doing that good before, and it did almost a $17 million gain, you know? I mean, and to be honest with you, PBC events, any major fight, the tickets will always get scrutiny. You know, when Golovkin's doing $1 million or $2 million or $3 million or almost $4 million dollar gates without fighting Canelo, it was something to rave about and something to really pump up and say, this is awesome. You can sell on both coasts and all that. And don't get me wrong, it is something to be celebrated because we don't have a lot of fighters that can do that. Even to create $1 million dollar gate, there's really not that many that do that. So judging by the ticket prices and the tickets that were sold already, and then when you look at going on the secondary market, to say that the tickets weren't moving at all is just stupid. Now, did I know the exact live gate? No. Has Bob Arum misled people and Tyson Fury misled people before about stuff? Yeah. The one thing about saying that, you know, and even like every promoter will say stuff like, you know, like it's on pace for $1 million buys, or, you know, if you look at the pre-buys, it's on pace for this fight that did 1.5, or, you know, you hear a lot of, I think Arum said, we think we can get 2 million on the last fight. You know, you hear that. But when it comes to ticket sales, we're going to find out about it. So he was the one saying that this is doing good at the gate. Now, that's Bob Arum, and Tyson Fury said it in an interview as well. But when you look at the ticket prices, these people do know what they're doing. Like I said, it's a separate argument to say the tickets in Las Vegas are too expensive. I get it. Now, you see a top-shelf show there, right, of entertainment. It's pretty damn expensive. But to blame it on the ticket sales, which obviously if you could get the UK fans over would be even better. So in October, hopefully the UK can come by then. You know, I actually was surprised. I didn't realize the UK, a lot of the UK fight fans couldn't come, because the reason why is I know multiple people in the last couple of months that have come here from out of country. Like my mom, who lives in Sweden, is here now. You know, so that threw me off. Like, oh, it's really like that still? There's UK fight fans that can't come over this time? That sucks, you know. But, of course, there's always going to be that, right? And the beauty of it, when it comes to a gate, we'll know exactly what's up. And I know a lot of people will hear from, like, Steve Kim and others and say, well, you can pay the tax on a ticket. It'll go down as a sold ticket. Yeah, but you know what doesn't go up? The gate. So if it drops to $5 million instead of $17 million, because that's what people are acting like it's going to do, we'll know, because you can see how many tickets were sold at what price points. It lays it all out there for you. So you're going to know if 5,000 tickets were sold and they just paid tax on it, because the amount of the gate. So you know, maybe the tickets weren't selling as good as they were. Maybe, you know, the thing about boxing, especially in Vegas, you can sell less tickets but price them for more and end up with a bigger gate. Or like the Golovkin-Canelo, I think that did a 26 or 27, and then the second time it did like a 23. I think they gouged it maybe too much. I don't know, but the beauty of that, like I said, and one thing I'll say about Bob, when the facts will 100% come out on this, like, soon, I don't think it was selling as bad as people were saying. I don't think they'd set the prices at that if there was no demand for it. But there's plenty of Vegas literally buy tickets all the way up to the, you know, the opening when they open the doors. So this whole thing, it wasn't selling at all. So, you know, nobody was buying them and this and that. And because there were still tickets available, you obviously haven't been paying attention. Like I said, I don't know what the live gate was. I do not know what it was going to be. I don't know if it was going to be 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 or maybe more than it did the first time. But like I said, time and time again, when it comes to especially PBC big events, like the Ortiz fight, oh, the tickets aren't selling, it does a $4 million gate. As I mentioned, when Gennady Golovkin was doing $3 million gates, him and Jacobs almost did a $4 million gate, if I remember. I think it was like 3.7. It was celebrated. This is awesome. We have a ticket seller, right? So anyway, point blank, there's no excuse on this one for Tyson Fury. There's just no excuse. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and go down this deep path of conspiracy over and over again. And I don't want to go too far on that, you know. Some people were saying he may have not been focused. He was out of shape. He needed some time. Okay. Is there a way you can fake a COVID test? Yeah, there is. High school students figured it out. Go figure, right? I'd be trying to figure that stuff out, too. I'd pay for that back in the day. You know, just a bunch of stuff. That, you know, he was getting touched up in sparring. He wasn't ready. He wasn't focused. Whatever. You know, he knew he had a big fight coming up regardless, whether that be Anthony Joshua or that be Deontay Wilder. So, I don't know. You know, there are people that aren't tied to the camp that were saying he was doing major rounds and looked good. Then you see some marks on his face, and people can say, look, he was getting his ass kicked. Well, you can get a mark on your face or have a decent to mediocre to bad day in sparring. It doesn't mean that you want it out. So it is what it is. It is what it is. If you want to go down the it wasn't selling or Tyson wasn't ready, I get it. Now, the thing is, Fury has opened the door to conspiracy. That's what he's done in his career. He outboxed easily, you know, Vladimir Klitschko, right? We all know that. You may have not liked it. It was boring. Fine, but he beat him easily, okay? We know that on the, you know, he said he hurt his ankle on the rematch. Next thing you know, he was running around. This was what, summer of 2016 for the World Cup, remember? He was running down the street all wasted. And you can be wasted in injury, by the way. But if your ankle's all messed up, what are you doing running down the street, right? And then obviously tested positive for COVID. And then the PED scandal that came out. Not at that time. That came really shadily 6 months later or whatever, right? And it just so happened there was like a two-year gap of when he didn't fight, and it was almost like time served to be able to fight, right? So we know, even on this trilogy, think about it. They fought the fight. They had the rematch negotiated. They sent the contract. Tyson Fury said, I had a contract for like a week. He decided to take a more lucrative deal with ESPN, and I don't blame him. But that delayed that one. Now, that was just minorly, and it built the fight, whatever, that's fine. But, you know, so he's opened the door. The door's wide open for conspiracy because of that. And to be honest with you, these last 5-6 years, no matter what side politically you are on, or maybe you're neither a Republican or Democrat, whatever, independent, Green Party, Libertarian, whatever it is, clearly, conspiracy theories have been just rampant, and a lot of them don't even line up to any kind of logic at all. You know, anytime someone's like saying something, let's say they talk for like 30 seconds, and within that 30 seconds, you could already break down the theory, that's not a good look. You know what I mean? So have we seen strange things happen before in boxing? Yeah, it's a corrupt sport in many ways, but it is what it is. Regardless, the fight's not on. Now, you know, if you're – and this is something I'm going to bring in John in here in just a second. If you are John – or, I mean, if you are Tyson – or Wilder, excuse me. I'm all over the place. If you are Wilder, are you just going to start to go in the lawsuit mode just in case? Because if October 9th you know, is the first working date. And that's a rumor. We don't know that to be true for 100%, but it makes sense that it'd be in October based off wanting to have space between pay-per-views and events and open venues, you know, at the end through the MGM, not just Garden Arena, but in general, the T-Mobile and whatnot, that whole group. So do you, because, and the reason why I say that is because we all know, what was it, September 15th or September 7th? I don't know. I don't remember. But the date they made it, the arbiter came up with a date. This fight has to happen by this time. So it's just, it's on one hand, it doesn't surprise you, especially with Tyson Fury, just in general. Not even saying he's ducking. Just in general, though. He's inconsistent, right? He's inconsistent. So, but it is a downer, like I said, especially for the fans and especially for the undercard fighters. That shit means a lot more to them at this point, money-wise, financially-wise. And now some of those, you know, that heavyweight card's probably not going to, they're probably going to mix some of those up, you know? There's already rumors about, which is kind of cool if they put two of those heavyweight fights as a doubleheader on Fox or something like that. You know, I don't know if they, you know, if one's going to go to ESPN or not. Like, are they going to keep that F.A. and Sanchez fight? Because, you know, what do you, who gets that fight, ESPN or Fox? That might be an argument there. So, maybe I hope they save that so that's still on the undercard. But I really don't know, man. It's just disappointing. And, you know, the sport itself disappoints you. You kind of get used to it over the years. Sometimes you get a little numb to it. But a little over 2 weeks out is just freaking ridiculous, okay? By the way, before we dig into some of this stuff, like the weekend, a very entertaining card in the Charlo Castaño, I'm going to bring in John here in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ropadope Radio. Now, once you're in archive mode, which that's generally the most listeners that time, obviously, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropadope and download the show directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find the platform Ropadope Radio on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really across the board almost. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a whole lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, everything in between. One more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69.99 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. Stream it anywhere on any device. Of course, they have the cloud DVR available. And if you sign up for the choice package or above, you get a free year of HBO Max. That's AT&T TV. Okay. So before, you know, I bring on John and we dig into that Fury stuff and the possible repercussions, what, you know, let's say John was, you know, representing as a lawyer Wilder, what would he do in that scenario if this fight might get pushed back to October and there's no funny stuff? And what it means with the arbiter, that decision, what that means in the future for that, if any funny business were to happen. But before we get into that, you know, Ramirez looked damn well. I actually thought Barrera boxed pretty well in the first round, but that was about it. I mean, the pressure, the uppercuts, like I said, some boxing and some decent lands, a few nice punches by Barrera. But, I mean, that left hook to the body started coming. I think it was a left hook that dropped him in the third round right away. And another left hand, I think it was a whipping left hand that, you know, landed perfectly to the body. Second was like kind of the second knockdown in the TKO was like a combination punching. Ramirez looked damn good at 175. What's that mean in general? Jojo Diaz got what I thought to be a fairly competitive fight. I didn't agree with all the scorecards. I thought it, well, actually, maybe just the 117, 110. There was a point deducted from Diaz, which you could kind of say was shaky, but the one thing I'll say is the ref did stop him and say, either of you do this, this is going to happen. Now, you can argue if the ref should have laid off for a little bit longer before he went to that point, but the ref did do that. You know, he did mention it. So it was kind of in between, whatever. It is what it is. But I actually gave Fortuna the opening round. It was close. Gave him the second round. His jab and his short left hooks, his straight left hands, I thought were landing cleaner. Then Diaz, really in the middle of that fight, got it going. That third round, I thought he had, even though Fortuna had like a decent start, a good start, the better shots, the better lands, especially down the stretch in the last part of that third round, Diaz did it. And there was a headbutt. There was a cut. I forgot about that. There was a cut from that. And I was thinking, oh, boy, here we go. And it was that fourth round. You know, if you're an official scorecard judge, you do have to go 10-9 because it's a 10-point must system. But a lot of people had it 9-9 because they had, you know, the body work, right hook, straight left hands by Diaz really taking over. And then Diaz for a while, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, even the 9th, maybe the 7th Fortuna, you could have gave it to him, but I really thought 6 was a two-way round. It kind of had Fortuna in scoring mode, whereas the body and head shots, maybe not as many, say, in the 6th for Diaz, but they were harder. And to me, he took over the fight. You know, he definitely, at left hand to the body, like I said, uppercuts, good action in the fight. Don't get me wrong. Gave him the 10th as well. I actually thought Fortuna closed stronger in the 11th and 12th, though. He was just kind of flurrying right out of the gate of both of those. Maybe the 11th round there was a nice, I think it was a nice left hand or some combos late that. Maybe you could give Diaz that round. But I had it 8-4. I know some people had it like 9-3 or higher. Some people I saw had it 7-5. I thought it was a competitive fight. Even 7-5, though, that's Diaz 114-113. I was pretty comfortable with that 115-112. But the other two, it was 118, really, right, without that. So you're looking at, you know, a 10-2 and 9-3. I didn't see 10-2. I didn't even see 9-3. But I did see 8-4. And, you know, it was a fun fight. They both got really close, right around 200 lands. Fortuna landed or threw like 140 more, but he wasn't as accurate. And a lot of them were just scoring punches, kind of stat busters and whatnot. But Diaz did bounce back, got the victory. We will talk a little bit about William Zapata's upset of Tanahara. And also Estrada, she looked really good. Estrada had that. Well, we'll get into it. I'm going to go ahead and bring in great boxing mind John here into the program. What's going on, John? How you doing, man?
Chris, how's it going tonight? We enjoyed listening to you recap some things, and I'm ready to join and throw in my two cents.
So let's, you know, on paper, this looked like it had potential to be, you know, a fun card. And I didn't get a chance to watch all 9 hours of it or whatever someone said on Twitter. I didn't get a chance to watch every single solitary fight, but I did get the gist of most of the card, even down to a little minor upset knockout on the undercard as well. I think it was really early. But it was fun. It was really well matched. We had some upsets. We had some close fights. But on the top of the bill, Gilberto Ramirez just ran over Barrera, maybe after that first round of boxing. Well, after that, there wasn't much left. He really took it to him.
Yeah, a good performance by Ramirez. Played out like I thought it would, but I thought it would take a few more rounds than it did. So that's credit to Ramirez. You know, Barrera is one of these guys, I mean, who's really, you know, he's only lost to top fighters now. He's 39 years old now and he's off. But let's face it, a lot of fighters were delayed because of COVID and had some time off. So I think it was a really good performance by Ramirez. You've got to remember, Barrera did beat Joe Smith soundly a few years ago and broke his jaw, even though he was down early. And, you know, as we mentioned last week, you know, a lot of people forget or don't realize. I mean, Ramirez already has a win over Vlasov at 171 pounds some years back, but it still matters. And, you know, Ramirez still undefeated, 30 years old. You know, even though he's had some stops and starts with being off, I got a feeling this performance is for real in the sense that, you know, Barrera is still a solid fighter, and I think Ramirez is going to make his run now in his prime. You know, he's got the size. Again, as we said last week, very, very good body puncher. Kind of unusual where he's a guy that's really more accurate and more effective to the body than he is to the head. But it works for him. That's why I thought it might take a little longer with Barrera, but he was doing his usual body punching, but it was just so hard. And, you know, he's got really good size, even for light heavyweight, that, you know, Barrera just couldn't hang around with that kind of body attack even for a few more rounds. So really good performance by Ramirez. As far as I'm concerned, that really should move him of the division in terms of, you know, Beter Biev being the champion, the real champion at this point. Bivol clear number one, Smith number two, even though the Vlasov fight was close. But I think Ramirez fits right in there, and certainly, I mean, let's face it, he's at a point that he's a threat to beat all those guys, a legitimate threat. It's maybe not at a point where right this moment I'm going to say he will beat all those guys, but he's a threat to beat all those guys for sure. And you know, as those fights get closer, maybe he is a guy you pick. It's not out of the question. He's talking about going up to cruiserweight and heavyweight, and you look at that frame, and at 30 years old, and he's got a good body attack. I mean, why not? You know, the money's going to increase if you get the heavyweight, even if maybe you're not going to be able to handle some of those real big guys. But, you know, I will say it because they're both fighting on DAZN now. A lot of people will get outraged by this and not want to hear it. But, you know, if they ever do run into each other, and because of their size, if he does move up, not out of the question, he's the guy that matches up real well with Usyk because he puts pressure on. And, you know, Usyk's got a lot of fans out there, and he's a talented guy. But you go back and look at that Gassiev fight with a critical eye, and look how much he looks to the referee. Every time Gassiev throws a body shot, he's looking to the referee. And you have a big southpaw like Ramirez who works the body like that, and he's tough, and he's coming forward. That's not a good style for Usyk, in my opinion. So that would be something that would be quite a bit down the road. But they're both on DAZN, and Ramirez is talking about moving up. You know, Usyk's supposed to be fighting Joshua, but we don't know what will happen with that. And, you know, this would be way down the road, one step at a time. But, you know, in the meantime, he matches up certainly competitively, I think, with Beter Biev, Bivol, and definitely Joe Smith. So he's in good position. I think Golden Boy just keeping him active and getting him good fights now is really – just going to be the question for Ramirez. And if he gets those, and it looks like he's going to get Bivol, I have a feeling that one will happen. That's a tight matchup, and I think he'll bring out the best in Bivol because of his style. So that would be a good fight.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And, I mean, he is a big dude regardless. I mean, and you see him at this weight, and you're like, wow, yeah, he's still a huge freaking guy. I mean, obviously his height and everything, but his back. And I mean, that dude is a big boy. And, you know, the time has come for, you know, as many challenges as possible. I mean, you know, we know it doesn't always go back to back to back. We get that. But, like, he's had a number of fights where it's like, all right, dude, you know, you've had, I think it was, five fights in four, just a little under 4 years. It's time. It's time. And I heard, you know, Oscar De La Hoya a little while saying we're going to try to get him to Floyd's record first. It's like, well, hold on, dude. He can't fight another 10 fights or 8 fights without fighting someone big. So let's hope that those get done. There shouldn't be a problem, like you said, you know, platform-wise and whatnot. So let's hope it gets done. And you're right. He looked damn good. I got to say, he looked really good. And now he's building a little bit of momentum as far as fighting a couple times within a 12 to 16 month time frame. And, you know, by the end of the year, whether it's we're looking at, you know, July, right? So whether it's, you know, October or not, by the end of the year, it would be lovely to see him in a must, really, to see him in a big fight. Now, Joseph Diaz Jr. bounced back against Fortuna. And I mean bounced back from, not just a mediocre performance and a draw, but also missing weight when you just moved up a few fights. That's always a bad look. What did you think of Diaz Jr., and now where does he stand, you know, in that top 10 or whatever? It's funny. This was an interim belt, right? And for some odd reason, John, we didn't get the just chastising the WBC all week. You know, we have an interim WBC. We have a WBC champion in Haney, quote-unquote, and then we have the franchise. So we got the WBA special happening at 135, just happened in the WBC. But we're more worried about the fights. We thought this was an interesting fight and a good fight to test the waters at this weight. And Diaz passed the test cleanly.
Yeah, I think I can. This is maybe a moment before I get into Diaz's in-ring performance that can jump in about the belt stuff, because you make a good point. You're right. There's selective outrage, and you know my position, of course, on this, Chris, is, you know, I don't care about the alphabet belts at all, and I don't think it's even just an old-school thing. I just think it's a sensible thing. So, but you make a good point. You know, you have kind of this, like surge of outrage with Tank Davis, and there's absolute equal stupidity with this WBC just manufacturing lightweight champions every time.
And it's just like undisputed too, now that I think about it, not to cut you off, but it's also undisputed. We have an undisputed at 135, just like we had it at 140.
Well, you had a real champion at 135, and I think I still am old school like that. You know, the original eight weight classes are really all you need, with maybe a cruiserweight. So to me, it is even worse, because it's one of the real divisions, traditional divisions, and Lopez is the champ. There's no real dispute about that. So, you know, why weren't people clutching their pearls and going insane with outrage because JoJo Diaz and Fortuna were in something called a WBC interim lightweight title fight? What was it interim of? I mean, in term of what? I mean, Lopez is supposed to be the champion. You have Suleiman.
Yeah, Haney just fought.
Yes.
It's not like he's been out for a year.
Right, he just beat Lomachenko. I mean, he is saying he is the champ. Devin Haney just fought. What's Diaz and Fortuna? What are they interiming? I mean, it's you have to make up word, because it's just comical. But why I mention that is because I think it's a good tie-in. To me, this was some of the big boxing news during the week. You know, you have boxing news, you know, 9, you know, it's kind of like the UK's version of The Ring. And they, you know, had a really good great editorial. It's a big step in the right direction. They're just going to use the transnational board rankings, which I'm one of the board members on that. And I say that not just because of myself, but that's because of what we need. You have to declare independence to be on that board, you know, that you don't have any conflicts or anything like that. So, the point is just sensible ratings, no matter who's doing it, sensible ratings with some integrity. So, you know, boxing news saying we're not going to talk about the alphabets. I mean, that's what you need to get to. In other words, exactly like Matt Christie, their editor, says, that's the way I always look at it, like whether I'm tweeting or podcasting or whatever, you know, you maybe just make a factual statement that was on the line, like you're talking about, like the fight was on Fox. You know what I mean? Like you say, there was a WBC interim belt at stake and the fight was on DAZN. I mean, like you just say it like that, you know, it's not meaningful in terms of where the guy ranks in the division or anything like that. So, I mean, you're right and that's what I'm just saying. Like, I think the point is, I think where some of the people at the ring weren't getting it, and they need to get it because they have to carry that on, because go back to 1922 and the tradition. Like, the idea is, you know, you shouldn't even be talking about the alphabets. In other words, what you were getting at is absolutely right. Like you had people who wanted to get on the Tank Davis thing because and justify it by saying, like, well, these other alphabet belts are the real belts. There is no, you know, real alphabet belt. I mean, the alphabets are a joke. Look at
right.
what we're saying with the WBC, the WBA. And the WBA is a joke when they have a belt for Tank Davis and they have a belt for Josh Taylor and the same stuff, the interim, the super, all regular, all this kind of nonsense. But the point is, it's all garbage. You can't pick and choose and say, well, I like the WBO belt or whatever you want to call it, regular belt, traditional belt, but I don't like this. They're all garbage. So you can't talk about them seriously. Boxing News came around to that with an editorial. That's the right way to do it. My hope is, and I know it's a long way and people say you can't do it, but you got to try. And look, they're making it easy with how insane they're making it. I think you try to get rid of talking about the alphabet belts first, and then if you're successful in that and people finally do start ignoring them less and TV doesn't use them as much for marketing like we've talked about, then you try to get it where you're getting rid of these weight classes too, and then the sport would be in a lot better place. But it's a good start, so that's my feeling on the belt thing, getting Diaz in the ring. I thought this one played out pretty much like I thought. Diaz just, you know, doesn't have the pop. He's got good skills. He can do a lot of other stuff in the ring. He went more in a pressure mode in this fight. And, you know, as I thought, really, it's reaching a point where Diaz, you know, when he's fighting other guys, they're going to be the better puncher. I mean, even Fortuna, a guy who had fought at 130 pounds, not a massive puncher, but you could see he was a sharper puncher than Diaz, but Diaz just has more all-around skills, upped his activity level. And I thought he won the fight, but I think it was like you said, it certainly wasn't something that wasn't competitive or something where you couldn't give Fortuna a lot of rounds in the fight. I just thought you needed to come to a conclusion that Diaz won it. So in that sense, I think the judges got it right. But one thing I was thinking today that I would qualify Joseph Diaz, it's what the future does hold for him. I personally feel very confident that he'll get the Ryan Garcia fight on DAZN, and that can be a good gate in California, and it can be a good show for DAZN. It can be a good comeback type thing for Golden Boy, actually having two of their fighters in a big fight. But even though I like the fight because it'll be entertaining in terms of outcome, I was thinking about this today. This is what I think I'd have to make a comparison. I wanted to see Arturo Gatti fight Oscar De La Hoya, not because he really had any chance of beating him, just because I wanted to see him try to do it. I knew it would be entertaining, but he wasn't going to beat him. When we're talking about JoJo
sure.
Diaz fighting Ryan Garcia and possibly Devin Haney, because he's been fighting on DAZN as well, he's not beating those guys, but those are fights I'll watch because I do think it'll be entertaining to see him try to do it. But he just doesn't have the size and the pop. And it's even the pop more than the physical size, because if he was at his size, you know, he's 5'6" or so, and I move up to 135, but he could punch, it might be different when he starts putting some pressure on. But he just doesn't have the pop. So he's not going to hurt Ryan Garcia. He's not going to hurt Devin Haney. And Ryan Garcia can hurt him for sure. Devin Haney, some of his performances lately, that's starting to become more into question. But Ryan Garcia can hurt you. He's fast and he can hurt you. And he's going to put hurt on, JoJo Diaz, but it's that Arturo Gatti De La Hoya analogy. I want to see the fight. It'll be entertaining, but JoJo Diaz isn't beating those guys.
Yeah, that makes sense. And now that I think about it, there are plenty of, looking back at it, there are plenty of fights that I remember saying that would just be a good fight, or, hey, you know, in this situation now with the multiple platforms, instead of multiple, you know, promoters on HBO or, you know, trying to put cards on HBO, there are some fights that need to be made just based off entertainment too, because, you know, casuals and boxing fans in general, common boxing fans, hardcores, they love it anyway. A good TV fight that's just fun to watch, you'll always leave pretty happy after that. So, yeah, that's a good call. I can think of a couple just off the top of my head on that. And yeah, I agree. I think that would be good. It's in-house because Devin Haney is still kind of lingering with DAZN, but he's not. He doesn't have a contract right now. So I don't know if he still has an option or he doesn't have an option. That's a little weird, but either way, that fight can be made. But we all know that they're not in a rush to make that fight. They want to build that fight. That's just bottom line. I mean, if they're talking about Oscar recently, we're saying, well, you know, Tank's not big enough just yet. His pay-per-views aren't big enough. Maybe next quarter or first quarter 2022, which really doesn't line up with making sense, like all of a sudden it's going to be a blockbuster pay-per-view next February. But if they're talking about building to that fight with Gervonta, then that Haney fight's going to be even further down the line. So let's make the in-house fight that will be entertaining. And another quality name, solid fighter, even though Diaz Jr. hasn't been at this weight much, still solid fighter, good fighter to put on the resume. And who knows? You never know. Maybe Diaz catches him with something early. We've seen him hurt multiple times in his career and obviously got knocked down, but not a guy who's known to punch in Campbell. Now, William Zapata came into this fight 22-0 with 20 KOs going against a 19-0 prospect with only, you know, 5 KOs, Tanahara. From the jump, this was nasty. I mean, the left hand by Zapata to the head and body right off the bat. Now, don't get me wrong. There was fun stuff. There was two-way stuff. For a couple rounds, but I mean, just a nasty, nasty body attack, crazy pace, John, set by Zapata. I mean, this dude was just in destruction mode, and he did exactly that. What'd you think about that performance? That was just devastatingly fun to watch because he just kept punching, and don't get me wrong, Tanahara would had his, you know, had his moments here and there of landing shots, but you could tell pretty early on, well, I say it's going to be a long night, but it's not going to be a long night. He was in for a beating, and a beating is what he got.
Yeah, this was just the case that Tanahara is just too underpowered, even as a lightweight, and Zapata was able to take advantage of that. And, you know, like you said, he was very active, an excellent performance by him, you know, really attacking the body, really being aggressive, really throwing a lot. And he's got good pop. Of course, he's got a very high KO percentage. But the one thing, Tanahara is so underpowered that there was a dramatic power difference in this fight. And I think that was what made the difference that enabled Zapata to dominate and have this big win. But part of that was, even with Zapata's great KO percentage, you know, he's really stepping up his level now. You know, a lot of lesser competition before that, you know, that he fought in Mexico. But he doesn't look to me like he's a real one-punch guy, or he's so devastating that he might not have some, you know, that he isn't going to have trouble when he fights some guy with pop, when he just comes forward like that, you know, unless he's got a rock chin. I mean, which he might, we don't know, you know, cause Tanahara can't punch. So, you know, if he's got the chin to go with that style, maybe that's going to overcome it. But, you know, if he's even got an average chin, he doesn't look like he's got that devastating of a pop. Even though he's got that very high KO percentage. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on. Great performance by him, only 25 years old. We want to see more. He's definitely on the cusp of the top 10 right now. And it was a great performance. I'm not taking anything away from him. But Tanahara just can't punch at all, and you have nothing to hold him off with. You know, he would have been reduced to running around the ring, and you know, you get tired doing that. And a guy like Zapata, who's got aggressive and knows how to work the body, you know, you're only going to be able to run for so long. So I think Robert Garcia made the right decision stopping it. I concurred with that. Nothing was going to change, and Tanahara was just going to keep getting beat up. But I want to see, you know, how Zapata's power is going to be against somebody who can punch back with a little more authority.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. It was just really explosive, man. I just love the pace he set, and it wasn't just volume punches with nothing behind it. It seemed like every damn punch Johnny threw was like, I'm trying to hurt you, and a lot of it was to the body. And I always loved me a good body puncher, you know what I mean?
No, it was good stuff. Like, it was good pop. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
you know, he's got the KO percent, and he wasn't a non.
It was a wear down thing
like that.
Yeah.
But, right. It was a little bit of that wear down type thing where you might have to see exactly how his power carries against somebody who can punch back with a little more power, maybe he's a little more competitive with him. How his power looks there, but definitely a breakout performance for him. We're going to see a lot more of him, and we'll have to see who Golden Boy. You know, because Golden Boy has Diaz and Garcia, but I don't think they're going to put Zapata in with them right now when they're looking at making some big fights.
Right.
And you know, if Haney does fight more on DAZN, which, like you said, that deal was just up, but I'm just assuming maybe he's going to stay affiliated with them a bit. But, you know, he's got no reason to fight him. So maybe he gets that probably does make sense. You know, maybe he gets Linares, who came off a solid performance against Haney, and he's with Golden Boy. So, you know, maybe they can give Linares enough money to take that fight.
Yeah, could be. You're right, though. It does seem like he's just going to have that wear down effect, which obviously, you know, it comes in handy. But you also make a good point that, you know, Tanahara doesn't have power, and he was able to, even though he was taking a beating, he was able to land plenty clean shots. And if he had more pop, it may have been a different story. Estrada, that woman's fight, I didn't see the other one fully, so I'm not going to speak too much about it, but I saw every round, and Estrada came out with really great distance. She was landing the counter punches a lot of times, either a lead right hand or a counter, through, you know, definitely some left hooks in there as well. You know, just moving really well. Like I said, lead or counter, it didn't really matter. Then as the fight went on, Estrada started turning up the pressure. And Tsunami, is it Tsunami or Tsunami? Because someone was saying it's Tsunami to me, and I was like, what? But she had some good lands. She had, you know, she just didn't have enough sustained success to win, to put rounds together. But she definitely kept bringing the pressure until Estrada kind of started dominating so much where she started applying the pressure. But like I said, that distance, the slickness, the movement, and whether it was the movement the whole time circling or just, you know, being able to pivot and gain control and put her on the rope, I thought Estrada looked good. Any other fights that you'd like to talk about on that undercard?
Well, I did see the Sunisa Estrada fight, and I think it was Tsunami. You know, Estrada looked good, and you know, I was thinking at Tsunami's age and you know, the record, I wasn't expecting much, but you know, she came back with some pop and some aggression, and it was a more competitive fight, more entertaining than I expected. Estrada clearly won, you know, she got resistance, and Tsunami had a little more pop behind her shots than I expected. But Estrada's got a lot of tools. You know, she's got a lot of tools in the toolkit, and you know, she's definitely seems to be marketable. So, you know, good appearance, good win for her. You know, said it before. I gotta say it, keep saying it, because there's just no sense to it. There's no logic to it. I mean, you know, gotta get to the 3-minute rounds. I mean, gotta get to the 3-minute rounds for the women. You know, the rounds are the same length in UFC. You know, these same athletic commissions are governing it, and they say, you know, that you can do the 3-minute rounds for the women, but then these promoters aren't doing it. It's got to be 3-minute rounds. I am going to keep harping on it because it is an equality issue. I'll stick with that. And there's no science that can be justified to say that the women have to have shorter rounds. So, you know, we've got, you know, in boxing, got to got to get away from that, got to get rid of that as soon as possible. You know, I mean, they say, well, where does it fit in the telecast? Well, they can worry about all that stuff with the length of the rounds or when they put the fight on. But you just can't. People try to, but you just can't justify the shorter rounds. And there will be more KOs if you get longer rounds, let's face it. And so it's hurting the women's game because, you know, it's the great Emmanuel Stewart always said it. He's right. I mean, it's just the truth. Fans want knockouts. So you're putting the women in a position – where they can't score as many knockouts. I mean, with a rule that is just disparate treatment that there's no basis for. There's no solid rational basis for. People throw stuff out there, but it's not solid. So it's got to be changed. I mean, we'll keep talking about it. It's going to eventually have to be changed because it just is unequal. It's discriminatory. So let's get that out of the way and stop the nonsense about keeping the 2-minute rounds, you know, and because somebody like Estrada, she had 8 KOs and 20 fights going into this one. She does already have the fastest knockout in women's boxing history in that horrible mismatch, but that Miranda Adkins fight, but you know, with 8 KOs and 20 fights, she's actually got one of the higher, especially for a low weight class, you know, KO percentage. So what I'm saying is if she had the 3-minute rounds, you know, she'd probably have a pretty good KO percentage, but she's not getting it because you're fighting 2-minute rounds.
Yeah, that is a good point. That is a good point. And actually earlier, if you haven't seen it, I saw this tweet earlier by Mark Ortega. It says, if you missed it Friday, check out Starling Castillo's brutal knockout of Miguel Contreras. In a deep undercard fight between two unbeatens, Castillo made a statement. He was only a -225 favorite. So it definitely was a heavy-hitting knockout for sure. You know, we will get to this Tyson Fury debacle, which is just ridiculous on so many levels. Obviously, when stuff like this happens, a lot of people are going to go a variety of different ways, whether it's the most way out there conspiracy, or there are some times where people have faked some injuries because they weren't in shape. Or, you know, I mean, that's what the boxing leaves itself, the door open for this stuff. And, you know, Tyson Fury's track record of just weird stuff leaves the door open as well. We'll get to that in just a second. But let's get to the undisputed fight here between Jermell Charlo and Brian Castaño. Undisputed title on the line. All the alphabets, A, B, C, D, all of them. This is a good matchup. Really on paper, John, I think it's a better matchup than people even think just because they don't really know Castaño. That fight with Lara was a while ago. He had some issues where, you know, there was supposed to be a rematch. Then, you know, he got stripped. It's just a bunch of weird stuff. He was supposed to get a fight. He ended up going to a different belt route, ended up getting the fight for this WBO, and just dominated, you know, the guy he beat, Teixeira. And here we are. And I really look at that Lara fight. Now, we know Lara doesn't move as well as he used to, and he was coming off that hurt fight. I mean, Lara, the reason why I think they've been giving Lara some gimmies is that fighting Hurd and Castaño in the same, I think, back-to-back. So they're trying to save him up for one more. I always thought it was going to be against Charlo. Maybe it'll be against the 160, Jermall. So we'll see. But either way, just off styles, this one is going to pop because Castaño, no matter what punch activity he's going to have, which is really high, I say no matter what because I do think that Charlo is going to be able to do some stuff that will slow some of that down. But come forward ability with some skill in a fair amount of it. Is he the most powerful guy? No, because, I mean, he was hitting Teixeira with everything and, you know, it's not like he knocked him out in the fifth round. But Charlo, you know, it's funny. On the way up, he was a boxer that had good skills, and people thought he was boring. Then he kind of flipped the switch, and now he does. I mean, even in his last fight against Rosario, he did actually move more in that fight because he knew he had a guy coming to him. I think this falls right into that same category. And even that rematch with Harrison, once Harrison went down early, Harrison flipped it and started coming forward. And he had some issues with that. And it's not like Harrison is, like, known for a come-forward fighter. As a prospect, when he was, you know, in there with maybe an overmatched guy, he would come forward and go for the knockout. But plenty of fights he'd be on the move, the Willie Nelson fight, the Herd fight, plenty of fights. So Charlo, I think, is going to have to blend some styles, but I see more on the outside. And generally speaking, when you're on the outside and you're on the move, it is tougher to sit down on your punches. So that the powerful punches, the KO punches that we've seen out of Jermell, and we just saw one to the body, and he had an early knockdown in that last fight against Rosario. Just the style, because we know even if Charlo moves, he's you know, he may not throw a lot of punches, John, but he's looking to get you out of there. I don't know if we're going to see that right away in the first, say, 2 to 4 rounds. I actually think we'll see a jabbing Charlo, a moving, circling, pivoting. I think we'll see the most movement we've seen in a while just because of how Castaño comes at you. I'm not saying he's just face first, brawler, always swinging at you and getting caught in exchanges, but he's definitely a pressure fighter that just keeps bringing it, and he has good pop. How do you see this matchup going down? Because it literally, not only is it undisputed and all that, it has a chance to pop and be one of the best fights of the year. And maybe I'm going on a limb here, but I think it has a chance to be the fight of the year, just the styles make fights.
So I agree with you. This is a really good style matchup, two talented guys. I do think Jermell Charlo got robbed in the first fight against Harrison. Why I'm saying that is, you know, Castaño's got the draw with Lara, but to me, both guys should be undefeated. So you've got, you know, and in all the alphabet bouts, but again, as I got into before, this is another a good example, actually a positive example of where you don't need it, because look, these two guys are fighting each other, and this is also going to be for the transnational title at 154, and it's going to be for the rings title at 154. Like I said, I'm not going to take away from this fight. I think there's too many weight classes, but if we're going to have 17 for the moment, but not talk about the alphabets, this is for the 154-pound title. There's just, you know, you don't need alphabets. Nobody's disputing that. So that's a great thing. And the style matchup, I do agree. It's a very, very good style matchup because, you know, both guys had good amateur careers as well. You know, Castaño, you know, he even faced top guys in the World Series of Boxing. You know, he's been in with, you know, Errol Spence and, you know, Derevyanchenko. He's got a win over him. You know, the guy's real talented, but, you know, even though they have to weigh in the same weight, you know, like we were talking about Gilberto Ramirez before, you can look at some guys in the ring and they just look bigger. And why I'm saying that is, you know, Castaño and Charlo are both going to have to make the 154-pound weight limit, but Charlo's just a shade under 6 feet tall. And, you know, what's Castaño, about 5'7", something like that. Not that big. And like you said, comes forward and has pop. He does have some pop, but he's not a massive puncher. But like you said, you know, Jermell Charlo came up as a jabbing boxer. I did feel he was a boring fighter at that time. I'm just going to say it because I hated watching him fight back then. He was boring. He was a jab master. He was a boxer and a jab master. And I got to say this because I don't think it's an exaggeration with him, and it's worth saying, and I've been saying it for a while, but I'm going to say it again because I think it's true, with total compliment to him, and a lot of it's when he went to Derek James, because usually this can't happen, but it happened with him. I can't think of anybody in all the time I've been watching boxing that made a transition from being a guy without much pop to having power than Jermell Charlo. I can't think of one that's ever been better.
Yeah.
So he's an anomaly to me like that because, you know, his brother was always the puncher. And even though he hasn't scored as many knockouts lately, it's been against some good opposition, and he still puts hurt on you. So I still think he is a puncher. But Jermell was the non-puncher, and then he became – now he's scoring more knockouts. But the transition is real. You look how he's done – and it's just something you just don't see. It's really extremely, extremely unusual. You always hear about it being tried, and it never works except with him. It's worked, and, you know, a lot of that's been since he's with Derek James. So you got to give some credit to Derek James there too. And, of course, Derek James works with – Errol Spence. So, you know, they've got some power punching going on in that gym. And, but like you pointed out correctly, Jermell Charlo's volume has been as good as he's been fighting. His volume's been down and Castagna's volume's high. I don't think anything's going to change in this fight. So that's where I see the risk for Jermell Charlo is that, he, as long as Castagna's in there, he's going to be getting out. I don't think anything's going to change this. He's going to be getting out hustled by Castagna. So I do see it a little differently than you, Chris, in the sense that I think Jermell Charlo will start out from the opening bell, not going volume, but just looking to land bombs. And he's going and Castagna's the smaller guy. And like you said, I agree, a lot of skill. But he's not really like an elusive mover boxer. And you know, Charlo's going to know that going in. So Castagna's going to be there for him, not in an unskilled way, but, you know, with skill. So he's not going to be easy to land bombs on, but he's going to be there. He's not going to really have to look for him. So I think Jermell will start. I'm not saying he's going to get him early, but he's going to be, I think, throwing less punches, but he's going to be throwing the punches with authority and looking to land bombs. And what it's going to come down to for Castagna in this fight is, you know, can he go 12 rounds and avoid the bombs, at a minimum not get dropped a couple of times? Because, you know, that could change the equation too. If Charles is getting out hustled, but he's trying to land bombs all night and he scores a couple knockdowns but doesn't get Castagna out of there, I mean, maybe it's enough to pull out a decision, a close decision or something like that. But I don't. Charlo's not going to win this fight to me unless he's, you know, he KOs Castagna or drops him multiple times. I don't even think one will be enough because Castagna's going to have that work rate and Charlo's going to get out hustled. Now in the Harrison fight, you know, Charlo's first Harrison fight, Charlo's work rate was a little down, but I thought Harrison was, to me, and they gave him the decision, I thought he was in a glorified survival mode. I mean, he was just. And, you know, you saw him do that late against Perella, too. So, you know, that's something, like you said, you know, yeah. When he was knocking guys out early in his career, but, you know, the chin's been questionable, and he became just a guy that likes to stick the jab out there, try to box you, and gets very tentative. And you know, I just didn't think he did much in that first Charlo fight, and Charlo didn't get the decision. I thought Charlo did enough to win. But, again, your judges were apparently looking at it thinking, well, this guy, Charlo's not throwing that much either, but he was, you know, walking him down and trying to land the bigger shots. I didn't think Harrison was effective. But just saying that if judges could go against Charlo in a fight like that, if Castagna can stay on his feet with how many punches he throws, and he's proven to be a better fighter than Harrison now at this point, you know, because he's got the draw with Lara. He's beat Mikel Soro, who's a very, very underrated fighter, got a decision over him. You know, like you said, clearly beat Teixeira, but I looked at it like you did. Teixeira, not to me a guy that takes the best shot in the world, and he didn't put any hurt on him, even though he clearly won the fight, and it was a good performance. So I think Charlo's going to have to get him out of there or drop him a few times. Most likely he's going to need to get him out of there. So I think that's what we'll be looking to do, and it's a question of can he do it before the end of 12. Based on the way he's been performing, I'm going to have to say he does it before the end of 12. I think with the size differential and the power Charlo's been punching with, and Castagna's going to be there even though he's got skill. I got to think Charlo's going to get in enough bombs before 12 rounds are up to get him out of there. And it's not one of the calls I feel the most confident in that I've ever made, but I do feel like Charlo knows what's at stake in this fight, bigger things ahead, even though it's big for both men. I just think that Charlo will be focused and maybe losing some rounds, but I think he'll get enough in before the end of 12 and get him out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just see, like you said, the size. I mean, there is a – I mean, you know, Castaño's trying to get close either way. So I could sit there and say it's a 67 or 68-inch reach to 73 and all that, but he's obviously trying to close the gap regardless. But, you know, when I look at it, I do see him using that reach right away. Like I said, even – he wasn't, like, super active against Rosario, but he was definitely on the outside, or Rosario put him on the outside, whatever it is. I think we do differ a little bit when he's going to go into, I want to counter and get him out of there. I suppose it does seem like he's in that mode in every fight, but there's just something about it. I think he's going to be, you know, whether it's switching it up or even some of the interviews or you know, some of the stuff that he is saying, you know, I can do both. I can use my boxing skills and whatnot. So it'll be interesting. So are you calling for a TKO or are you thinking a decision?
No, I'm going to call for Charlo with the TKO before the end. But I do agree with you that what I like about a guy like Charlo in terms of overall talent is, I mean, the guy was a pure boxer through the whole,
yeah,
you know, initial,
like,
part
in the
of his career.
Form.
Right, in the purest form, relying heavily on the jab. So somewhere that's still in him. You know, he hasn't been fighting that way, but, you know, he did stop Rosario with a jab to the body. And why I keep that in mind is that in that earlier phase of his career, it wasn't that he was stopping guys with jabs to the body, but the jab was always good. So, and then, but back then, you know, if you, I can tell you do remember, Chris, it was funny, again, the improvement, because he had that strong jab in the early part of his career when he used to box, but he threw the right hand kind of weird, and it was kind of not – it didn't have authority on it. But that's all changed. I mean, that's all changed. But I do agree. I mean, in theory, if he ever wanted to do it, I mean, you know, he doesn't lose that boxing skill. He's been out of that for a while, but it's still there. And I could see where he might want to keep Castaño at a bit of a distance there using that jab. We know he's got that ability, but I think he'll be looking for those big shots, and I think he is going to get enough of them in before 12 that he'll get him out of there. So I am going with Charlo by KO in this one, but I feel it's a very competitive style matchup, and it is a risky matchup for Charlo. I am in that camp on this one, even though I'm calling for the Charlo KO.
Yeah, I think he's going to hurt him. I think he's going to knock him down. I don't think either of these guys have been down, now that I think about it, but I am going for a unanimous decision. I do think I'll get into my take in a little bit. Let's get to this Tyson Fury thing here, John. You know, like I said earlier, of course, you know, boxing Twitter, boxing fans, some like part-time media members, YouTube channels, whatever. Some people will just run with anything no matter what. You know, it just, either way, like, let's just say it's just COVID and that's it, right? Just that alone. It just seems like there's just not a good enough excuse. You have to not get COVID before this damn fight. Some way, somehow, I know we don't really have details concrete. I'm not sure by the time it's delivered to us what form that will be, what format they'll give that to us. I really don't know what to believe when it comes to just that sparring partner or whatever, because they're saying it's a sparring partner that went in there. But So if it's a sparring partner, did you test them then? Because if you're blaming one guy that spread it, then what happened to that? Why didn't you know he had COVID? You know what I mean? It's kind of, and if you're doing rapid testing, like I mentioned earlier, I get it. There's some false positives, but why don't you just take back-to-back testing since they're so rapid? Or you could just do the 24-hour and just not let them get in the camp yet. You know, either way, this far along, in the main event. We saw Teofimo do this as well, but this far along out of, relatively speaking, out of COVID anyway, and how many fighters that haven't gotten it that by now, and it's been a lot now, right? Really, Teofimo in the last couple of months, especially in a main event that was super important. What's your thoughts here? A lot of people are saying, well, you know, they're not telling us anything. They're not telling us anything, so something's messed up here. Some people just say, you know, this is just Tyson Fury. It is what it is. I'd like your thoughts in general on it. And then also, if there is a working date or if any in event, I saw this tweet. I was going to read it on my boxing Twitter segment just in case you hadn't called in or whatever. I saved the tweet just because I thought it was a good tweet. If it didn't happen, you know, what would you do? Whether it happens or not, the fact that they're talking about, and it's vague talking about it, but it would make sense that the fight would be in October if you look at what's coming down the line. But that goes past the arbiter, you know, the arbitration decision. So do you, you know, just get the ball rolling on a lawsuit just in case and drop it? Like, what would you do in that scenario if you were representing, you know, and obviously you haven't seen the contract or whatever, but there was a pretty solid decision or whatever. It just kind of, you know, we've talked this minorly about what that arbiter decision means for a potential future lawsuit and everything. But just as like a fight fan and someone who, you know, follows the sport, has, like I say at the beginning, a great boxing mind, what are your thoughts here? Because with Tyson Fury, like I said, the door's just open for strangeness, you know, when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, well, good chance for me to clarify. Here was kind of my initial thinking on that. You know, part as a fan, but part, you know, putting my lawyer suit on, if you want to call it that at the same time. You know, when this was first announced, I was thinking, well, you know, Wilder's 35. Fury's got a bad history here like this. They already had to go to arbitration to enforce the contract for the third fight. So, you know, I'm thinking if I'm advising Wilder, you know, I don't know how comfortable I am with him waiting. And that is where your instinct was correct, that I said, and I think maybe some people really good-heartedly were thinking, well, that's kind of outside of the fan part, but thinking about the lawyer business part, we're thinking, well, it's a silly take to say Wilder should fight somebody else. So, I was thinking that, but let me clarify, because it does fit just with what you wanted to know. That was kind of my instinct, not only as a fan, but even as like a lawyer. If I got a 35-year-old Deontay Wilder, you know, I'm not feeling that comfortable about waiting on Tyson Fury anymore. Okay. Unless I'm getting, you know, a lot of good medical reports from the other side about, you know, Fury's been COVID tested or the entire camp and there's a big outbreak or something like that, you know, without that, and this all happened quick. So I have a feeling that wasn't presented, or I don't know who's seen that yet so far. You know, we're getting reports. So that's where I was coming from when I was saying, you know, maybe Wilder should just fight. Now, if you're in the Wilder camp, you would never want him to jeopardize being accused of breaking the contract. So I perfectly understand that. So, you know, you're not going to jump forward and say, oh, you know, I'm going to fight Adam Konatsky on July 24th, you know, without preserving or making it clear that, you know, if this is going to be considered by the Fury camp a violation of the contract, you know, you're not going to take that fight. In other words, it would have to be that you're not letting Fury off the hook on the contract. And that would kind of fit what you're saying, which apparently this contract, based on what happened before, this stuff, you know, gets complicated even for the lawyers. So any non-lawyers out there, don't feel bad if you're having trouble following it. It's complicated even for the lawyers. But that agreement, I know from what just happened that it has to be arbitrated first. I don't like this. A lot of people don't, but you know, this is more voluntary arbitration where both sides agree to it in that contract. Forced arbitration is like, let me just diverge for a second. Like, if you go to get a job and you sign up, you know, to go work for Macy's, and then they say they've got an arbitration agreement that if you ever have an employment dispute with them, you've got to go to arbitration. In other words, you just want the job, so you sign their paperwork. You know, Fury and Wilder both have sophisticated representatives, attorneys, that when they entered into their rematch their contracts for these fights, they decided, both sides, that if there's a dispute, it's going to be arbitrated. Okay, so in other words, you can't run the court first. It's got to be arbitrated. A judge would say, well, this contract calls for arbitration. That's what happened when they had that first dispute and Wilder won. The arbitrator ruled in Wilder's favor. So I do know that disputes under this contract have to be arbitrated. So, and there can be multiple arbitrations. So in theory, you know, Wilder
can force
if Fury's pulling out and he's saying he doesn't have reason for it, you got to go to arbitration again. So why I said all that is that if I'm representing Wilder, I wouldn't want to jeopardize that. And that fits what you're saying. You're right. Like, I actually do think if I was in Wilder's camp, I might be inclined to, you know, think, hey, Deontay Wilder can make some other fighting other guys, maybe not quite as much as Tyson Fury, but he's got some name of his own at this point. He's had, you know, PBC exposure and stuff. In other words, I might file that arbitration against Fury, and then you know try to get that moving quickly, so you can possibly sign up for another fight. But again, you're waiting to see how that comes out. You can always settle these things too. So and then where they just don't fight and you agree to some kind of settlement. But now if you're with Fury, I mean, you know, he can't just violate the deal. He's going to be, you know, subject to potential damages. And remember, an arbitrator just ruled against him, and he's got some people that know that, certainly. Okay, so that's where, to me, and you saw me tweeting like that, I mean, I need to know facts. I mean, if Fury's really got COVID, or everybody in his camp really had COVID, and you know, there's some risk there. Now, again, there's no reports now. Well, actually, there was. Bob Arum said Fury was fully vaccinated. Then we heard he's got one vaccination. If this has to get arbitrated again, all these facts are going to come out. I've already tweeted that, you know, that's really what we want to see. We don't have that in all boxing situations. In other words, in this boxing situation, if Wilder's going to enforce the arbitration portion again to enforce this contract, these facts are going to come out. I mean, in other words, Fury's got to then start proving, I had to delay this because I had COVID. You know, can Fury do that? We don't really know either way. That would be very interesting, but then there's going to be a wait. So, you know, Fury possibly, again, with representatives knowing he could lose that argument, that's where the talk of October might be coming in. But again, if I'm Wilder's, you know, camp, you know, Wilder's 35 years old, you know, this guy's not that reliable. I mean, you know, now if he shows you COVID, you know, testing that he's had it, and then maybe you wait till October and they're cooperating with October. But, you know, what's my gut feeling that happened here? I mean, again, that would come out in an arbitration. If Fury can't show that he had COVID, or, you know, 10 people legitimately had it, if that evidence, you know, when factually tested, if he can't show that, you know, I'm going to think then, not because he's afraid or something, but again, looking at Fury's history, we don't know why. They had to go to arbitration to get this fight. I mean, I would be inclined to be thinking that Fury didn't want to do this on July 24th, and he's got people around him that said, you know, we're going to be in breach of contract if we don't go on July 24th. But COVID's a special situation. That's been all over the legal world, where people don't know exactly how that plays out for this type of thing. And again, you know, Top Rank's got lawyers, Fury's got lawyers, somebody. You know, I'm saying somebody knows that. Now they're not going to want to do a, you know, believe it or not, even though it's boxing with this contract and the stakes, nobody, you know, you're really going to think somebody doesn't necessarily want to do a fraud or something like that. So, and they should not. So I'm just wondering again, if Fury was hemming and hawing about fighting on July 24th, and then, you know, maybe some people in his camp did get COVID. in other words, and he's got legal advisors saying, oh, well, you're exposed, you know, that we're not going to go on July 24th. You know, COVID's a special situation, and you know, an arbitrator might say, well, look what you have, again, with savvy representatives. Remember, in the initial arbitration that Wilder ended up winning, if I recall, again, and I'm not getting to read the contracts or the arbitration decision, but the credible parts that came out were that Wilder argued that he didn't immediately exercise that rematch clause by the deadline because of COVID situations, and which was a special situation. I think I recall reading reports like that. Does that sound about right? I think that there was something along those lines. And you know, that makes some sense. But in other words, we've already had this contract interpreted one time where, you know, COVID was a special circumstance. And, you know, you've got things like that coming up in all kinds of legal proceedings, and the legal world's trying to sort it out. So it's certainly a credible thing you could throw out there to get have the July 24th off. Now, what you said earlier, I mean, I agree when you talk about these wild conspiracy theories. I don't think at all this is any kind of conspiracy theory about gate, or we decide it's not going to sell good because nobody wants to see a third fight. I have a feeling that this was going to do well. I think Vegas, you already saw the Vegas people saying they're disappointed now that they don't have it. You know, they were getting right back to bringing in high rollers in person, people that paid big money for ticket prices. You know, fights that big in Vegas get gates, like you said, Chris. I mean, that in normal situations, which we're now getting into the post-COVID restrictions, I mean, that's a high roller fight. I mean, people are flying into hotels in Vegas. Not only are they getting gate, they're getting people watching it in closed circuit in other casinos and bars in Vegas. I mean,
they wouldn't raise the prices on their hotel rooms out of nowhere at this moment. You know what I mean? There's a lot that goes into that.
And I've gone to Vegas for a lot of big fights like that. And I mean, exactly, the hotel rates go up for the weekend. There's, you know, closed circuit television broadcasts and other casinos that don't even have the fight. They just had a drought. You know, Vegas certainly wanted this. I don't think there was going to be any kind of gate problems. That's not even the driving force. I mean, that was the driving force in 1930. I mean, the gate's not the driving force anymore. You know, it matters. It's revenue.
True.
It's a bonus. But it's not the driving force. You know, Vegas pays site fees. I mean, the gate's not the driving force.
Right.
Now, how it's going to sell on pay-per-view matters, but there would be no tracking at this point to indicate this fight wasn't going to sell on pay-per-view. They got 850,000 buys last time. I mean, I thought it might be bigger, yes, but you know, when you look at all the options nowadays. Right, compared to other fights, I mean, come on, who's come close to 850,000 buys lately? You've got the biggest recent U.S. pay-per-view sale in boxing, and you've got these crazy conspiracy theorists who don't like Wilder, or maybe they don't, it's because they don't like Fury, saying, oh, they were worried about how it was going to sell. I mean, come on, they sold 850 the last time. I mean, look how much more it is than all these other fights are selling. I mean, it's multiple times bigger than other fights are selling. So, you know,
I mean, it sold better than the McGregor fight this last weekend at the gate, the last one, you know?
Yeah, so I don't
McGregor's
buy any
never
of that.
Done a gate that size. Sides with Mayweather.
Right, exactly. So I think for me it either comes down to, because again, people go to conspiracy too often when they don't want to believe maybe some unusual things happen or things that they have trouble wrapping their head around. It's possible Fury did get COVID. That's certainly, I'm not eliminating that option. It could be that simple and people want to get deep. But I do think in this scenario there's probably, I have to see more evidence. In other words, you know, what would come out.
Yeah.
You hear is coming out, and there's another arbitration, or that they showed the Wilder camp. You know, I need to hear credible reports of the evidence of that. And if you're not getting them, if they never do come out, then I would think that Fury just really didn't feel like fighting on July 24th for whatever reason, and he has savvy enough representatives that, again, you got to be careful. You know, you don't want to be. I mean, you should. Nobody should, and you shouldn't be doing a fraud. And really, people should not do it because they should be doing the right thing. And I think that's what I always go with, and that's the way what you should do. But for anybody that has any doubts about people acting that way, you know, hey, you know, lawyers can get in trouble. You know, you have ethical rules and things like that. So I don't think you're going to, you know, people are going to go to that as quickly as some people in boxing might think, but it might be, but they might stretch. Okay. In other words, that's what I'm thinking. Like it might've been Fury's not looking like he wants to fight. And then somebody in the camp got it, you know, then you've got maybe advisors saying, hey, you know, he's exposed and, you know, we don't want to risk an exposure that, you know, in the ring or to anybody else, July 24th, that's it. We got to postpone. So those to me would be the two likely scenarios. Either it's just what they said and there is nothing more to it, or maybe Fury, based on his history, really wasn't very anxious to go on July 24th. I mean, obviously he's not afraid of Wilder. It's just, you do have to agree, Fury, eccentric character at this point. And, you know, you just don't know. And you know, I don't think it's out of bounds to say it, because, you know, if you follow these issues, it's worth throwing out. I don't know what he's been doing lately, but, and, you know, frankly, this could be applied to Errol Spence to a degree too. You know, Fury saying he's got, you know, he had these, you know, issues, mental health, he's talking about drugs and different things, but you see him, you know, this has been since all that too, since he came back to fighting, you see him out there drinking. And, you know, he rationalizes it. And, you know,
he was hanging out with Broner, for Christ's sake. He was hanging out with Broner.
Yeah, and Errol Spence had the horrible crash, which, you know, was apparently, you know, charged with, you know, DUI. And, you know, you saw him out drinking, and people said, oh, so what? He's young. Yeah, he's young and everything. But, and I'm talking here, I'm not talking about, like, moralizing issues here by me. I'm talking about, you know, when you start getting into the science of addiction and things like that, that, you know, these, you know, Spence hasn't said he's had a problem, but, you know, when what happened to him happened and then he's out drinking afterwards, I mean, I can tell you what addiction specialists are going to say about that just from the outside. And same with Fury, you know, he's going on these heartfelt interviews that about these drug problems and drinking and mental health and suicide. I'm not doubting that, but I'm just saying that then you see him, you know, this is since all that, you see him out there drinking. I mean, so again, not moralizing. So I'm just saying these can be involved. Like, in other words, you've already seen this stuff. So, you know, these guys are fighters. I mean, it's a brutal business. There's literally pain involved, and, you know, it's got to be brutal being in their shoes, and especially with the pressure. But I'm just saying that these are things we see. So, you know, there can be factors with these guys' behaviors involved too. But, you know, but with the COVID thing being thrown out there, I would think if somebody's throwing it out there, somebody in camp at least has to have it or something like that, and they're figuring that that's a good reason for a postponement. But I just wrap it up on other people have raised this, and they're right, you know. Even when you know, when if you're on the Fury side, let's say you're looking through his eyes, I mean, he's still in this contract. You know what I mean? So, and it keeps getting enforced by arbitration. So, he's either eventually got to fight him, or there's going to be, you know, contractual damages for Wilder. So, you know, but again, he never fought Klitschko the second time, and he had a deal. A rematch clause in a contract to fight Klitschko a second time. I don't think that's in dispute. Now, he wasn't dealing with U.S. law that time. You know, I do know now we're dealing, you know, apparently we're dealing with U.S., you know, we're dealing with U.S. law. So we already had an arbitrator. And I just throw this in one more final thing. There's just so much complexities to this. But even though I don't like this as a boxing purist, but you got to report the facts. The credible reports of what the arbitrator ruled, because we're not getting to read the whole decision, and arbitration is supposed to be private, so you got to be a little suspect, but this seemed credible to me, is that the Wilder side argued that the WBC belt is really critical in this scenario, even though the contract wasn't about that, and the arbitrator bought that. In other words, he's saying that this particular fight is so important because Wilder needs the shot to get that belt back. Okay.
Sure.
So since the arbitrator's already ruled that matters too, because I don't like us here, because then it goes to the whole legal thing, what's going to play out here. Fury's not going to be able to walk away with that WBC belt for you Alphabet fans. In other words, you know, if he's not going to fight Wilder again, that's already been ruled in the arbitration. It wasn't part of the initial contract, but that was a critical reason about this rematch. So for Alphabet fans, Fury's not walking away with that WBC belt without fighting Wilder a third time. I feel pretty confident saying that. And then you add into the boxing politics of the WBC's relationship with PBC. Again, I don't care about that belt. I really don't. But for those that do, and since the arbitrator made it part of it, I feel like I got to discuss it. Fury's not walking away with that WBC belt without fighting Wilder a third time, even though it wasn't an initial part of the contract. So that is worth clarifying. So we got to throw that in there too. So what I'm saying is, if Fury puts it on the shelf, which, let's face it, he did when he wouldn't fight Klitschko the second time. So it's not impossible, and he's going to pay contractual damages. Wilder is going to be fighting somebody for that WBC belt, for those that care about that kind of thing.
Right, and they would still pay big money because he'd still be technically the lineal, and I mean big money, you know, wherever Eddie was getting that money from, you know, so he could still go and do that thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
exactly. Yep. And right, I think that's not impossible. I mean, you know, that's going to come down to, does Fury really not, you know, again, because this is Fury, we know the history. Does Fury really not want to fight Wilder? You know, how adamant is Fury, for whatever reason, and we're just speculating about all the other issues and stuff, but they could be there. If it's something outside of the COVID, you know, how badly does Fury not want to fight Wilder a third time? And I'm not saying he's scared, just whatever the issues.
Right.
That we just don't know. I mean, we just don't know. And if it's simply the COVID, then he'll fight him. I mean, I think he's going to make really good money. Wilder's going to make really good money. I mean, it's not impossible that there was something with COVID. These things happen in life, and they are going to fight in October. But that's where it's going to have to be fact-tested, and we're just going to have to see what facts come out then.
Yeah, and then we hear that he's heading back to England. You know, it's like we heard Teofimo was in Italy. They told us that on ESPN. It's like, well, hold on. How in the hell his manager's telling us he hasn't even had a negative test yet. How the hell did he get on a plane to get over? It's just all over the place, and that's what's crazy about it. And maybe it is, you know, allegedly a ploy to say, hey, I still think the risk reward is better with Anthony Joshua right now, because it's, I mean, no matter what, it's more money. We pretty much know that. So why not go do that, and then maybe I'd fight Wilder later, but why not get to that money? Because if he gets starched, that fight is not as important all of a sudden, and all of a sudden it's a brand, you know, then Wilder takes the control of it. So it's not even like conspiracies to talk about, well, I thought you made a good example of, well, something's up. It could have been an injury too, and then COVID came up so they could use it. You never know, and like you said, we will – I mean, I don't know if we'll get it. We should, if this thing does get weird legally, clearly they're going to have to show that everyone that took the COVID test, you know, did it. And they're going to probably have to, you know, like if Bob's out there telling people they're, you know, that he's fully vaccinated, then we're going to have to see some vaccination proof too, because he was taught, and not that you can't get it, but let's say multiple guys are vaccinated, then it becomes a little funky that let's say there's four different people that have been fully vaccinated and they all four got COVID. Then it starts to go, huh, all four of them. Like, really? So that, you know, so it's not that you can't, of course you can get COVID if you're vaccinated fully. Of course you can. It's just, you know, it's supposed to, you know, decrease the issues with it. So you're not going to be, you know, feeling what you normally feel or whatever, but it could have slid in there at the perfect moment too. I'd really like to know what kind of test the guy, the quote unquote guy that they're blaming it on, supposedly. Like, okay, so what testing did he get through to get in the camp? You know what I mean? Because he shouldn't have. It's just weird. Because then if he got in to camp, then who did he get it from? Are we sure? You know, we're not tracking that guy maybe to the store or whatever. You know, it's such a – it's just a mess, man. It just sucks because we just got done 6 months of waiting around to see what the arbiter was going to come with, and then all of a sudden now we got to wait again like 90 days. So it is what it is, but this is boxing, unfortunately. Stuff like this happens. But, yeah, I'd like to hear some sort of concrete stuff here. But, yeah, Fury starts to mess around. Who knows what's going to happen here. But any other items that you want to discuss here, John?
No, Chris, I think we getting into the Wilder Fury situation, I think we covered that. I was really looking forward to that card. It's a shame we're losing the undercard fight. You know, you had a Jogman Sanchez. And, you know, I'm hopeful Konatsky and Helenius might still happen. I don't know if they've got any inside info or not, but they might. I see that the betting sites still, like DraftKings, still has it up. You know, they still have Fury Wilder. Yeah, and they took down Fury Wilder and Ajaga Sanchez a little bit after that, but they've still got Konatsky and Helenius up. And, you know, you wonder if that could be shipped to Fox or something like that. That would be great to salvage some of that, because I was really looking forward to the card. And you had, you know, Jared Anderson on there as well. I think it is a big blow for boxing there, because the heavyweight still brings more interest generally, unless you have like a Pacquiao Mayweather situation, or, you know, Leonard Duran, Hearns Leonard, those types of things. You know, there's some exceptions here and there, but generally the heavyweights put that kind of interest, and you're losing the heavyweight action here. I think it is a big disappointment. You had a great run. You would have had Charlo Castaño, then the Fury Wilder on that great card. Would have been the best card of the year to me, definitely. And then, you know, followed by the Spence Pacquiao, and you don't have that now. So I do think it's a blow. I do think it's a blow where boxing was getting some momentum there. And I don't know. It might come down to, does Wilder and his team want to wait around for this guy or not? And you know, you all the points you made are totally valid. I mean, really, with what's come out from the Fury camp, this information, even if it's by Wilder side in another arbitration, I mean, it's got to be factually tested. I mean, we need facts. We need some facts coming out here, and we might not get to hear them all just through some reporters, but Wilder's camp, you know, behind the scenes can be going for some facts, and we want to see some facts come out.
No doubt about it. We'll enjoy the fight this weekend, and we'll talk probably next Monday.
Sounds good, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. You take it easy.
Take care.
Yep. All righty. John bringing the good content per usual on the show tonight. I do see a variety of folks on. If you want to press one and join in, cool. You know, if you're just chilling. What in the hell? If you're just chilling, hanging out, that's cool too. Nothing wrong with that. Appreciate anybody that listens to it live or archive. Portland, you get back to me. Text, you get back to me. And if you have some time, you want to jump on, let me know. And just to kind of put a bow on this, I mean, you had Joseph Parker supposedly, allegedly. Or wait, didn't he post it on his – wait, hold on. Didn't he post something and delete it? Don't quote me on this. I know he posted a picture that he was at the Poirier – McGregor fight, right? But then there was a rumor that he tested positive for COVID. And he wasn't he like, I'm not going to say in camp, but wasn't he like watching Fury? Like Farr, wasn't he one of the guys that reported on, hey, he looked good or something like that? I don't know. I don't think he was actually in the camp. But he was in the camp, if that makes sense. He wasn't sparring with him, but I think he was watching it for whatever, because he was obviously in Vegas to be able to go to this McGregor fight. So it's just weird. Like he posts something on his Instagram, I believe, and then somebody said earlier that he deleted it. We're hearing that, you know, right away we heard, well, there's a spread in the camp. You hear like Lance Pugmire was trying, you know, he's got details. He said being told that the belief is it's the Delta variant, the strain of COVID swept through the Fury gym. Just amazing how it went through so many so fast, I'm told. That's what Pugmire went with. He even had the strain. He was down to what kind of strain we got. You know, we've heard up to, let's see, here's another one. I think this is Dan Raphael. Or no, maybe this is Coppinger or Jake with Boxing Scene, but, you know, they're saying It's officially postponed, obviously, but Fury himself is among the 8 members that tested positive for it. So, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Like, how did he get in the camp? So he got tested, and then he went stayed in his own place. Unless the guy already trains out here and has a place, I don't know, out here, I mean, out in Vegas. So this guy just caught it going to a store, or maybe he went to a bar. I don't know. I have no clue how he caught it or if he did. But, like, so what did he get tested with, you know? I just I don't know. And then there was some crazy stuff early, like, before this news broke from Talk Sport talking about, well, Fury wants to fight twice in 2021, and so it'll be Wilder and then a stay busy, a keep busy bout. If he beats Deontay Wilder injury free, I'm looking to fight again this year, 100%, no matter who it is. We'll see who's available. I might take a voluntary defense. So then you're like, well, hold on, what you're gonna do? What? Like, even that's kind of weird. With, you know, why face a potential risk of injury there, you know? So it's just, and the thing that John was alluding to was this Twitter handle that said MGM executives are enraged that Fury Wilder 3 will have to be pushed back to the fall. According to insiders, they're depending on it to, you know, provide a big revenue boost as convention business, international business continue to lag, because, you know, there hasn't been as many conventions, you know, because they're like, we'll probably just not go there with our company. We'll probably not. And this is Lazy Lefty, just to give you a little taste of the boxing Twitter segment. Two tweets here. Fury had enough sense to get the first shot, parentheses, if you believe that, but show gross negligence not to get the second and lied about being fully vaxxed. Wilder should sue him into the poorhouse because he played games and never had to face any consequences for doing this his whole career. Fury is single-handedly destroying all goodwill between TR, ESPN, and PBC Fox Showtime. These companies are setting aside tens of millions of valuable TV space in ad time, and he's blowing it. At what point does sunk costs facilitate? Basically, he's saying, you know, when do they go? I can read the cut bait. That when do they cut bait? Basically, like, I'm assuming, I can't read that. Someone screenshotted it and cut off. So I'm assuming he's just saying, you know, I mean, it's so true. Like, they have all these commercials are about to run, and they're, you know, getting no money for those commercials. They made room for it, you know, and let's not forget. And if you're a Tyson Fury fan out there, this isn't just ripping him to rip him because he's a UK fighter. I have respected and enjoyed a ton of UK fighters, okay? I've interacted with a bunch of UK folks over the years. The fan base is phenomenal in a lot of ways. Obviously, anything when it comes to Pacquiao, Mayweather, Joshua, Fury, the fanboys are headaches. We get it. You know, I'm not talking to that. You know, if you're a fanboy, it is what it is. You know, whatever. You can cry about it, whatever. But, like, he's already messing this up, right? But even the first initial thing he messed up on the rematch, saying, you know what, I'm done with this fight. The clause is over. I'm done. Peace. Well, hold on. ESPN was the one deciding, hey, along with Fox, we're going to have to move this because – all of a sudden that, what was it, December 19th date got super full. The NFL was going with two games. College football came back in swing fully, and all of a sudden everybody was going to have a championship game, a conference championship game on that day. So that was a legitimate, I know a lot of, or I shouldn't say a lot, some UK fans, really just fanboys, really. I'm not even talking to UK fans. Or media would say all this stuff, and it's like, dude, you don't realize what that day is. If you include two NFL games, dude, that is not the time you want to go pay-per-view. So it was legit to go back to January or the February date they had fought the year before in 2020. That did make sense because then you are more out on your own as far as not having the NFL all up in your face. So to already mess that up and then, but also not to fight in that time, right? So you delayed it on some stuff that clearly was bullshit. So December comes around. December, we started hearing about mediation, then arbitration. 6 months later, I mean, they're sitting here with this, you know, earmarked cash going, what in the fuck's going on? And then now this is going to happen where they're talking about 3 to 4 to possibly allegedly 8 different people in your camp got it? Like, what in the hell were you guys doing over there? You know, so, yeah, this is, like, if we want crossing, when you have a network and they're already paying for content from the, you know, from Top Rank or Al Heyman, they're already paying that. They're not trying to split cash with people left and right. Right? We know that. Fox, if you pay attention to their quarter reports, they showed a revenue gain from pay-per-views on Fox. This is factual. This is public record. Anybody could read it. I think it was 3 straight quarter reports on their pay-per-views. One of the reasons they talked about, and I talked about this months ago, was the pay-per-view revenue. So to sit there and say this, that, the third, it's ridiculous, dude. And this is a serious thing. And this is also one of the reasons why boxing has problems on network TV. Because much like the Charlo Harrison rematch that got canceled, you know, they still had a card, and it did an okay rating, but it wouldn't have popped as much as it did because someone got hurt. When someone gets hurt in football or team sports, the show goes on. And in boxing, this type of an event, you can't just put it in Joe Schmo because Wilder's going to knock the fuck out of Joe Schmo. And now you paid all these major prices. You paid the pay-per-view just to see Joe Schmo get knocked out. That's just not how it works. I know a lot of people say, oh, the UFC would have just thrown someone in it. Well, boxing fans don't fall for that shit, dude. They just don't, and there's less path to victory in boxing compared to UFC, as we know. So you can be kicking the shit out of someone. Yeah, you can counter and knock them out or whatever, sure, and change the fight. But there's just so many paths to victory in UFC. If you're on the ground, if you're on your feet, blah, 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 right? I mean, or if you kick somebody and your shit gets messed up, right? And you break your ankle or whatever, you know what I mean? Break your leg. So, I mean, it is a major thing, though. This is not to be – we want these networks to come together every once in a while for a big fight. Like, do your best to make in-house, on-your-own-platform fights. But, you know, let's get some of these cross-promotional. This is not good for cross-promotional because they're like, dude, it's just not reliable. We already saw you can't put $2 million fighters on Fox or CBS consistently. Because this stuff happens. So, you know, this stuff doesn't happen in other sports and especially in other programming. That stuff's already edited and it's a done deal and you got yourself a show and the show's going to play. You got all these episodes for the season. And this is an issue. And it just makes it worse. It does. And I'm not ripping on Tyson Fury out of nowhere. If you don't think this affects both sides of it and what they in the future of them dealing with boxing, you're just wrong. You're just wrong. It does affect it. I'm not saying, oh, now they're going to just give up the deal. You know, I'm just saying it does do something, though. It does do something, dude. All right. We still have some current fight news. Of course, we'll end the show with the boxing Twitter segment where we talk, you know, we go over some great, great tweets, right? But we also expose some fanboys, but really media members acting like fanboys. Right now, though, I'm going to go out to Portland 503 and see what's on his mind. What's going on, man? How the hell are you, man? Portland, you there? I'm not hearing anything. All right, I'm going to mute you up and go back to you. Oh, okay. I just got your text. Okay. It's all good. Real quick. Yeah, he just said he needed a little bit more. Okay. Real quick. Prograis. Okay, someone sent me something about Regis Prograis and how some quotes of his. Okay, so this is from a Twitter handle. Regis Prograis on his PBC relationship. Well, we'll get into this because there is some new information. But here's interesting. So here's something interesting, I should say. So Woodley and Paul, we all know, are fighting August 29th, right? Now, excuse me, Amanda Serrano, and this is a quote, she stands out as the most prolific KO artist in women's boxing. What a night this is going to be. I think that was Jake Paul. I'm not sure. But Jake Paul and Woodley, we all know, is going to be a pay-per-view that does numbers, yada, yada, yada. Now, the show is going to be in Cleveland, and he's not far away from Cleveland, from my understanding. Well, a really good look for Amanda Serrano, who definitely deserves this. She's going to be on the undercard. I don't know if it's a co-feature or whatever, you know what I mean? But this is from Keith Eidick as well. Cleveland's Rocket Mortgage Field House, August 29th. So I'm digging that. That is great for her, Serrano. This is a big opportunity for her to be introduced to some younger fans in women's boxing. So anytime that is the case, that is pretty dope. You know what I mean? And she's saying, or her manager, I should say, is saying, Erica Cruz rejected a $100,000 purse to unify on that pay-per-view undercard. So she's fighting somebody else. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. All right, I'm going to try Portland one more time here. Portland, what's going on, man? How you doing? Portland, you hear me? All right. He must just, which is cool. I get it. You know, you got stuff to do. No biggie. Oh, okay. I just saw Carcino pop up. All right, let's go to Carcino. All right, let me refresh that to make sure it's okay. All right, Carcino for life. You know the name. You know the channel. What's going on, Carcino? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on? Just running around, doing, taking care of everything I was told to do on Monday. Can you hear me?
You're breaking up pretty good. I can hear you, but it's kind of just on and off.
All right, what about now?
There we go. That is really, really good. I can hear you perfectly.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying that I'm just running around doing stuff, paying bills. You know, the typical Monday, you got to hit the ground running.
Yes.
Now.
Yes, indeed. That is a lot of times what I do on Mondays, run errands, do stuff, pay bills, a variety of stuff before you can get into talking boxing. Now, we can talk about this very entertaining Golden Boy card that was headlined by Gilberto Ramirez, and JoJo Diaz got a nice win, among others. We can also talk about this Charlo Castaño fight, which stylistically, come forward fighter against a guy that can box, should be damn entertaining. But also, this Tyson Fury mess right now is a hot topic. You know, everything from he legit got COVID, not, you know, 8 different people got it, to they're just using this COVID as a spread that someone got it, but he didn't get it. And they want to move on from this fight so they can go fight Anthony Joshua. It's all sports of conspiracy theories. And obviously, you know, Tyson Fury, when it comes to rematches, he has a track record of being a little funky. I mean, that's for sure. And so he kind of leaves. I remember he said he messed up his ankle with that Klitschko, and then he was seen in the World Cup running down the street drunk with a bunch of people. He said, man, that ankle looked pretty good to me. He's moving pretty well. It's not about anybody ducking, but if there's a bigger money opportunity with a less powerful guy to fight Anthony Joshua, it just kind of leaves the door open for conspiracy. But this whole thing is a mess. We still don't know. You know, we don't have any proof of all the names who got COVID in this camp, but I'm sure some of that will come out here soon once they get the reschedule. The working date they're talking about is October 9th. But it's just a mess, man. And so any of those three topics or anything else you want to talk about, we can get to.
Oh, man. The Tyson Fury incident, that's the one even Sean called me. Whenever Sean calls me, normally me and Sean used to talk every day. Now when Sean calls me, it's like, uh-oh, something went wrong. Something huge is happening. So he starts talking about Tyson Fury. And he's like, oh, man, Tyson Fury, man, you know, I don't know if he's really got it, you know, because he's had a lot of mystery, you know, fights not kicking off. You know, a lot of fights
right.
were postponed or they don't happen at all. And that always happened with Tyson Fury. But, you know, he had a little bit of a substance abuse problem back then. So I understood. But now he's an indifferent human being. So if I'm thinking for something like this, I couldn't dream of a reason for him to pull out and then to use something as serious as COVID, because naturally you got to test for that and the doctors are involved. So if he got it or someone in the
right.
camp got it, they could easily go in there and verify this. So it wouldn't be a situation where, you know, one side says something and, you know, like the Nonito Donier situation when he had like a false positive for a fight, then he had to pull out of it, you know, and he ended up having to pay all that money for his training camp and everything else out of pocket, and you don't recoup the money because the fight don't happen. You know, for smaller fighters, this is, you know, this is damaging. But I think they'll do the reschedule. More time to get back in shape for Tyson. It's a mind game for Deontay Wilder because Wilder is so locked in and so focused. This is another painful setback for him because now he's got more time to dwell on it and overtrain himself. So when he loses,
he looked like
he'll be
was peaking, didn't he? Like his body looked like he was peaking and ready to go.
Yeah. So if he loses, he'll be out there, man, I had this fight ready to go, but then I overtrained and I put all my mind and my energy to fighting on that date. And to this day, I was ready to fight him on that date. And he didn't give
they
me that fight on that day.
They changed the day.
So in his mind, he's already got the excuse down. He's already going to make some money. He's going to lose. And now he's got an excuse. So everything is covered. All the pressure's on Fury now because everybody thinks he's ducking. You got some of the Wilder people who don't really follow boxing believe he cheated because Wilder said so. And now, so all the pressure
there's
is on
all sorts of conspiracies on this one, dude. This has got to be one of the most conspiracy-driven fights ever. No wonder that people are still talking about this fight, dude. It's like a forever story. It's a soap opera.
Yeah, because it don't end. It's like it just shows you how much controversy and just you don't even have to have anything remotely close to evidence or even factual. You could just say, look at his gloves. That looked like he's holding some type of metal object in that glove. All type of logic goes out, like inspections, all that. People don't follow that. They'd be like, yeah, look at that glove. There's definitely something in that glove. Oh, man, it's amazing.
Yeah, the funky glove. The loose glove was in the first fight anyway. You know what I mean? Like the left
exactly.
hand.
It was like as soon as
weird,
the second fight's
the
over.
First fight.
They're showing images of the first fight. As
You're
soon
right.
as the second fight is over. Here comes images of the first fight. And the people who never watched any of the fights, they don't
exactly.
know the difference. They're like, yeah, man. That's why he beat
there
Wilder.
It is, there
I'm
it is.
Like, that's the first fight, dude. Man, it's incredible. But, oh, the Charlo Costanza? Woo! Where should I go
that's
with
that?
That's
got fireworks, baby. That's got fireworks.
Yes, it does.
All
Charlo's
over.
In a fight? I can't believe it. Jermell's the only one doing fight. Can't believe it. But Jermell is doing fight. It's Jamal. We got to get him fighting. So, I don't know. This last fight might make him fight another tune-up for a tune-up. But Jermell is out here. He's doing something. He's trying to really go for some belts here. So now they think they have this fight because they feel like they have the power advantage, the size. And in a way, they kind of right. But you're dealing with a fighter who could fight with both hands, and he's very aggressive. I mean, very aggressive.
Very aggressive, yes.
Yes, very aggressive. Now, this could play into Charlo's hand because he's more of the boxer of the two Charlos. So he can stick and move, and he don't have to go and find Costanza. All you got to do is set trap, let him walk into him, and try to close the door. But his problem he's going to run into is you're fighting a guy who's very orchestrated in deception. You think something's there that it's not. He knows how to close distance really fast and change the angles. And the way he dominated Laura makes me think he can dominate Charlo the same way. I don't think Charlo's advanced enough to box him that way. He's going to try to fight with him. And it's about who's going to have the most dog in him. Because this guy fights in spots. He picks his moments, and when he sees the door open, he attacks. And he attacks very well with both hands. Very rare somebody at this weight class fights like that. He fights with both hands. And I said, wow, I've never really seen too many guys that fight with both hands at this weight class like this. He throws about as many of right hands as left hands in the rounds. He fights with both hands, clearly. He takes risks. He goes in with all heart, and they do it with footwork and strategy and change of speed. He was able to throw off and offset Laura's timing. Laura's basically a one-arm fighter. He's a softball who likes to control everything with the jab in the left hand. But he couldn't really get a rhythm because the angles were being cut off. He was being jumped from certain points of the ring because of the footwork. And I'm like, man, this kid's got deceptively good footwork. He is hitting angles. This guy, I'm like, he's beating Laura. And I had him, and they robbed him and gave him the draw. When everyone thought Laura was just going to get the belt back immediately from this guy because he didn't have any experience, I was very impressed. Very impressed.
Yeah, I had him winning, too. I had him winning, too.
Yeah, and I thought it was large, which scares me going into a fight like this because the champion really is could you say Charlo's the champion? I don't really know. But I want to see how this is going to affect the actual bouts that's coming up, like the future of this division. Because this division is bright. It's got some stars coming in there. And when Errol Spence, you know, I guess makes all the money he can here, he can go to his weight class. That's when I'm really going to start betting against him. So, you know, I mean, to see the fight with Jarrett, can you believe what happened with Jarrett? Jarrett Hurd? I don't think we've even had that conversation. When Jarrett Hurd lose to Arias?
Yeah, Arias or whatever, yeah, yep.
Yeah. that was supposed to be his comeback domination. And to lose like that, I think Hurt was damaged beyond repair. I think he's a man stuck within styles. And he's trying to learn something new to what he used to do, and he just can't take it no more. Like, these guys are teeing off on him, and it's not, he's not walking through all these these punches he used to. Because Arias or whatever is not even a big puncher. You know, so, yeah, I saw that, and I was a little shocked. I didn't see the Golden Boy fight this week. I saw the, because I watched the UFC card. I was out basically all this weekend moving around. That card wasn't too great. But Castano, man, he's going to bring everything he got. Him and his father, you know, they got a plan for Charlo, and Charlo's going to try to control everything and dominate this kid, and he's going to realize this is a little harder than he probably thought.
Yeah,
now,
it's going to be a tough fight.
To win
this ain't
this
coming
fight,
easy. Nothing's going to come easy in this fight.
Yeah, but what Charlo has to do in this fight is he going to have to get that water bottle ready, because he going to need it for this one. You better have that water bottle ready, because you are going to need it for this one. Castano, what he's going to do is bring the pressure and use his power. He believes he's the stronger fighter of the two. I think Charlo's actually stronger. But the thing about it is Jermell doesn't commit to his power like Jamal does. He mostly wants to depend on his boxing early on. Now, only when everybody was seeing the last fight with that he had with Tony Harrison,
Rosario.
I think that's how Jermell fights. Yeah, he don't fight like that. That's not how Jermell normally fights. He doesn't go out there swinging with a lot of big punches like that early. He normally jabs,
right,
use the jab, and then when the opening's there, he would normally shoot his right hand and start with a combination. He normally throws, but that's mostly Jamal would commit to the uppercut combination with the jab, right uppercut, and he tries to come back after it. But Mel is a little bit more reserved. He won't commit to it right away. He just wants to throw two shots, like bang, bang, and then get back to a jab or starts, trying to control with pace. But see, the thing about Jermell is when you fight too many guys where you're the ring general, you're the one controlling the pace of the fight, that could mess you up, because Tony was able to take control of the fight very easily from him. Whenever he wanted to take it, Jermell, he couldn't take it from Tony Harrison, like the control of the momentum of how the style was going to be fought. Tony was able to dictate that and take it from him whenever he wanted to be aggressive. Jermell was never there to meet that, to say, no, we're going to battle this out here and take it. Jermell just started stepping back and giving him to that position to him. Now, if Brian Castano takes that, then, you know, I believe he can take that position from him. He took it from Laura, and I was shocked. Laura don't normally let anyone take control of the – he normally controls the spot in the ring and dictates. This is what I mean, the footwork of Castano, when he hits those angles, he hits them at different speeds. It's very deceptive. He can come in – and that's what I tell people, like, other people can be faster than you. It's all about timing. If you get them off balance and your timing is right, you can change the fight. Because they could be fast, and Laura was fast. He couldn't out-time this guy. And it was like every time he tried to turn, he was there to cut the ring off. He knew what you were going to do. He bullied you into the ropes and just was pounding. It was impressive. It was impressive for someone who was supposed to be overwhelmed by the moment. Now, this is another opportunity to him for him to prove what he could do in the ring, and because a lot of people still doubt him, think it's going to be over, and, you know, he's just here for being another opponent. And everyone compare him to, like, you know, Madonna, the Argentine history, you know. So everybody goes that route. Oh, you can, this is it. He's just like another Madonna. This is, I'm like, they're two entirely different fighters. They fight entirely different. They're not the same. So.
Yeah, and Madonna had more power, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because he was way bigger. But the thing about Brian is that they have that same tenacity, and they have quickness with the feet, and very deceptive in how they get their punches off. Like Madonna would always catch, he would catch Adrian Broner with the same punch he never could catch Floyd Mayweather with. So if you stand flat-footed with him, Madonna would hook the left. You would think he's going low to jab to the body. That was only a deception to set up a looping hook up top. He kept catching Broner with that. He would jab to the body, and then he would bend low like he's going to grab to the body with the left and come up top and sweep that left over the top, and was catching Broner with it every time he did it because Broner was biting on the face. And sure enough, Bryant used the same type of tactics of little short baiting you into, like, he's going to throw the right hand or the left, and you don't know what's coming sometimes. And it was throwing Laura off. Laura had a hard time timing him and, you know, getting his rhythm. He could not control the rhythm with his jab. He was throwing him off. And I said, wow, this is impressive. So this presents a lot of problems for Charlo. Charlo's going to have to be a little patient in here and wait for his moment. If he tries to trade with him early, this could be a mistake for Charles, because you're going to exert a lot of energy, and this guy's going to exert a lot of energy, but this is the fight he wants. He wants to maul you on the ropes. He wants to bully you in. He wants you to know he's the bigger, stronger guy. Even though I feel Charlo is stronger than him, I think that it's a mental game. And if he allows this guy to bully on him like this, the pressure will start to mount on Jermell that he's failing or he's losing. And this is not the kind of guy that's going to give you round. He can come and take it from you.
You're not going to take a round off and try to win it with the jab.
Exactly. He's not going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to get some gas. He's going to try to take the round from you every round, because he's going to always feel like he's losing. His father's going to make him feel like that, too. So that corner is something else. So it's going to be an interesting fight. My prediction is Jermell Charlo will lose to Brian Castano by a split decision.
Yeah,
split decision.
I really think it's got a chance to be a fight of the year candidate, man, because
it's got a chance, because they're gonna I know Charlo, once the fight is like getting away from him, he's gonna start trying to push. He's gonna feel that pressure of
he's gonna go for it.
You know, because he showed a lot of heart in the fight where he was losing before.
He was down
to
get hit clean.
So who?
Oh, yeah, Jackson. Talking about Jackson?
Yeah, Jackson. Yeah, Julian Jackson.
Yeah, that first title. Yeah, that's right. He needed the knockout to win. Same
yeah,
with
he
Harrison.
Did.
He
Julian Jackson's son had that fight won, clearly. Clearly that fight was over with. Charlo, he looked terrible that whole fight. He was out of place. And
he was trying
got
to come
the
forward
knockout.
The whole fight.
Yeah, Julian Jackson Jr., I believe, he was, oh, my goodness, he was incredible and just got caught. And that cost him the fight, getting caught. So it happens. This is the sport of boxing. You're going to have some nights you look good, some nights you look bad. But Jermell dug down and pulled out that victory. Believe me, my phone was ringing all through that fight.
Yeah, for real.
They were hitting
and
me
I remember
up.
Him
Man,
saying,
you watching this?
Yeah, I remember him saying before that, you know, he's sick of getting the, I'm a boring boxer. I'm going for the knockout tonight. I don't care. And he was trying to come forward, and it wasn't working. And credit to him for getting that knockout. But I do remember him in the lead up to the fight. He was like, you know, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of that. Everybody's saying I can only box and all that. And I'm gonna go get a knockout tonight. And everyone's like, yeah, okay, you'll probably just outbox him. And sure enough, it wasn't working. But he made it work. He finally made it work. But yeah, you're right. And even in that second fight. With Harrison, you know, he needed that knockout because, you know, as far as like walking away from a fight, what people thought was going on, most people had Harrison up 6-4 going into the 11th. You know, he had a clean, he was up, you know, I don't care what the scorecards say, he was up and he needed that. So credit to Charlo for doing that because that's not easy to do, but yeah, you're right. That Jackson fight, there was like, because at least in the Harrison fight, he had knocked him down early, and that actually changed Harrison's mentality. Like, okay, dude, I got to get that back. I'm going to push for it. But that Jackson fight, he wasn't winning any rounds, basically. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. And that was the first fight I think he had with Derek. I think that was the first fight he had with Derek Jackson as his trainer.
Oh, yeah, with Jane? So, yeah, maybe. Yeah,
yeah,
I didn't think about that.
I think that was the first fight he had with Derek Jackson. He had just switched, and I think that's what he said. I want to be a more exciting fighter. He left Ronnie Shields
right. Him,
and Jamal chose to stay because first Jamal was going to leave, and Jamel was tired of not looking good and fights but getting the win. And he's like, man, I'm tired of people saying I suck and I'm boring to watch. And they were like, look, you're winning, don't worry about it. Ronnie. He's like, no, Ronnie, you training me like I'm a football player. That stuff works for football, not boxers. I need to be trained like a boxer. So he went with Derrick James, and I remember even Samaje went with him because Samaje was his sparring partner, and we're going to have him on here so he can interview because he hasn't fought since 2019, since he won a title. He's still signed with Don King, but some lady hit him with a car, and it messed up his back, and he wasn't able to fight for like 2 years. Every time he tries to train, he just messed up, and he can't so it's... It's more things to it, and he wanted to bring that conversation up in the interview. So we were going to, you know, get the conversation going. I talked to the guy that you bring on here from Boxing Scene. I forgot his name.
Jake.
So I tried to tweet him the other day so he can contact me back, but I haven't heard back from him yet. I'm going to have to go back and check and see. With Jake and see what's going on. I don't have his number, but I was trying to get him as well to cover it because this is going to be pretty interesting what happens here because there's been a lot of stuff going on as far as court and other things of development with this situation. Like it's holding up certain fights that was going on. So, yeah, it might be an interesting story altogether. And it's sad because he wants to get in there and fight, you know, like the rest of his guys. He's seeing them, you know, move on with their careers. And, you know, he can't fight because he's physically not able to do any of the training that's necessary. So that's something.
Yeah, definitely. That's really something.
Yeah, Floyd
loves
sticking it to Conor McGregor. Yeah, Floyd likes sticking it to Conor McGregor because he wants Conor to go into this. They wanted to do a rematch and go into boxing. So Floyd wants to do an exhibition with Conor McGregor again. That's why this trolling has been going on in this fashion because he's trying to get him to sign up to do one of these, you know, like, let's do an exhibition, you know. We don't have to do real fights. let's make it an exhibition and do this. But Conor chose to go and do the UFC fight again, and like he could do UFC. Conor's done. I don't know if anybody realizes this. I did when I bet all this money on this fight that he was done. I saw it and I was like, I know a fighter who's done when I see them. I knew this when Chuck Liddell was done. I was like, man, I love Chuck, but I cannot bet on Chuck anymore. I know this is, it's over. And I will bet against Chuck, and Chuck will be winning the fight and we'll get caught. Pop out. I'm like, yep. I'm sorry, Chuck just don't. When he kept coming back, I'm like, no, Chuck, don't do it. But in this case, Conor McGregor's confidence, he never was that guy. He was Ronda Rousey all over again. You know, they had that confidence. They were believing the headline. They were believing they were really that good. And all the really good fighters were just waiting for them to get in the ring. And once they got in the ring, it was over. Like, he can't beat Khabib. He's not a serious enough, dedicated fighter. He was never that. He was good at,
yeah, that's
you
a
horrible
style matchup for him.
Oh, yeah, anybody. Tony Ferguson. I say if Tony Ferguson would have grabbed his hands on him, if Tony Ferguson would have grabbed him, Khabib would have grabbed him and put his hands on him. Conor McGregor can't fight those type of bouts. You know, I'm like, those are not the kind of fights for him. He's a two-round fighter. He's not a serious MMA fighter. He was beating up on smaller guys. I'm like, in boxing, we've seen this 1,000 times. They took a big guy like Oscar De La Hoya, sweat him down and won the welterweight or something, let him beat up on all these little guys at 140, 147, let him fight at these weights, beat up all the little guys. And then when he started fighting people his size, he's in trouble. You know, they're doing it with Sean Porter. Put Porter in there with somebody his size, he gets beat. So it's the same scenario. I said Conor McGregor is beating on little guys because he's 20, 30 pounds bigger than them. And on fight night, he's way bigger than them. There is, like, no rescaling for them. As long as they make weight, they're good. So Conor will come in the ring about 30 pounds bigger than a guy and beat these little guys down. And then I'm like, okay, he sells it. He's good for marketing. I'll give him that. He knows how to sell it. And that's very rare to do. But he's not like Chuck Liddell. Chuck Liddell was a fighter. That was it. The ice man will ice you. If he hits you, you are going to sleep. Chuck was for real. So I was like, no, that was a real fighter there. I don't want to run into Chuck Liddell now. Chuck Liddell is a problem.
But according to Oscar, it's Chuck Liddell. It's Liddell. Can you remember when he said that at that press conference? Liddell is the, you know, it's like, God, Oscar, come on, dude.
Right. Anyway, I'll be like, Chuck, don't weigh him down. So I knew Floyd's going to troll him to death because he wants to do that. Yep, he wants to do that rematch. But Conor, in his eyes, he came to the ring. It's not even there. That brash, he couldn't even do his walk no more to the ring, that little confidence strut. He can do it. He knows. And he knew that Poirier, he looked at him. Poirier wasn't going for it. Nobody's going for that anymore. All that yelling, nobody's buying it. You know, they know it's all an act. And when you get in there and they ring that bell, this is it. He basically had no confidence. I saw he had no confidence in the cowboy fight. His confidence was gone when he came back. That was like the most terrifying. Fernando Vargas told me the most scared he's ever been in his life was watching. Oh, okay, there you are. He said the most scared he's never been afraid in his life going into a ring was the first fight after he lost to Trinidad. When he had the tune-up fight, and he got dropped in the second round of his tune-up fight to a fighter who came out of retirement just to fight him. I'm like, oh, my God. On Mexican Independence Day, Vargas comes back. He barely made weight. He was like, man, going to the ring, he was so scared. He said, I've never been scared getting in the ring. I was an amateur at anything. That was the most terrifying feeling in the world, getting in that ring. I was like, what? Entirely scary. And when Conor McGregor came back to MMA and he fought Cowboy, and he got in that ring to fight Cowboy, he was terrified. And I looked in his face, I was like, that's not the same guy. He's totally not the same Conor McGregor. And that
once
fight
you're
was
not
over
the same
30
guy
seconds.
Too, it's in this
yeah,
in
Cowboy
type
was
of
done.
Combat.
I mean, that
sports,
was all put together to give yeah, to give Cowboy. Everybody loved Cowboy. We know he's done. But we knew that. He ain't won a fight in like 4 years pretty much, but he finally got a big fight, you know. We were like, okay, good. Cowboy gets to go out with a big fight and get a check. We knew what this fight was, but we knew from this point Conor was still done. But he came in and got a stoppage in like 20, 30 seconds. Like, he took one punch. I don't even think Conor got punched in the fight. That's just what they wanted was to sell the fact like he's back. I'm like, if right. you put Conor in with anybody, he's in trouble. Dustin Poirier was supposed to be the tune-up fight. They were going to try to get Khabib to come out of retirement for the rematch. He got beat so bad by Dustin Poirier, all of that was off the table. So the only way he could do was to fight Poirier again and then beat him so that they could make this match. Now Poirier is going to be the one that they're going to have to pay the money for Khabib to come back. But Khabib already beat him. So it's like difference of styles. But Dustin Poirier, I said this is going to be even quicker than the first fight because Conor McGregor, one, is already afraid. Two, he fought the fight afraid. He came out so active, throwing spin kicks. That's how he broke his leg. He kept kicking and trying to kick Dustin Poirier in the leg, and he was kicking hard. And that leg just gave away. I think he fractured it when he threw one of those kicks. It was so loud. I think he
yeah.
hit the shin. And I think he had fractured it in the fight. And when he stood up on it, it just gave way completely. And when he injured, he broke his other leg in the first fight. The right leg was broken. Like at the shin, he had fractured something on that leg. So, he was overcompensating, putting all the weight on that leg, then going to training while the other leg healed. And normally, now it gave way. So, you know, it's just time. Right now, he's not a marquee guy anymore, but they're going to keep putting him on cards if he wants to continuously do this. But now he's lost his fan base, a lot of his fan base, and believing he can win. That was thrown out of the window after that because he could say the ankle gave way, but before that, he was getting beat. they could have stopped that fight at any time. It was that bad for him
right.
on the ground.
And it was back too, you know, so it's like, I mean, what
yeah,
else
I know.
Say,
it's like
you know? It's like, well.
Yeah, it's like he's laying on that canvas getting pounded. It's like a common thing now for Conor McGregor. And now it's happening more frequent. It's like, man, normally you go 3-4 rounds. And I had a lot of money on the third and fourth round stoppage. I'm like, oh, I'm betting this third and fourth round. Let's just go, baby. And I'm begging for the referee not to stop it. I'm like, come on, Herb, don't you stop it. Don't stop it, Herb. This is before I even knew he broke his ankle because we thought he got hit. And he went down. We never saw his ankle buckle. We was looking at the punches, and I was like, oh, he must have caught a short shot because he's going back down to the ground. Uh-oh, this is going to be over. Come on, bell, ring. And I was like, uh-oh, I don't think Conor's going to get up and make it in there. And, yeah, his ankle was broken.
It was completely fractured. So, yeah, that's almost like the kind of injury he got, that's like almost a year. So,
yeah, it's
you know,
it's definitely
that's like a year out. So he's gone for the year. So he can forget about anybody thinking about him. It'll be next summer or something if he comes back to do any of this. That's 6 months in the boot. Then there's surgery, all kind of different things. So he's done for now. They can might as well move on from anything entertaining Connor in this in this type of movement moving forward. So I think they need to. Poirier has proved that, you know, he would Thiago Alves in his corner. You know, it's definitely helped him out with, like, leg strike. And this is what fighters are about. But anybody want to know what a real, like, mixed martial artist fighter and people who really take the art seriously and really fight, this is what it's about. Not about the wins and losses. It's about what you learn and add on to what you did earlier. If you're the same fighter you was 5, 6 years ago, you're not doing anything. You're not going to advance it. Dustin Poirier has advanced tremendously than what he used to be. He's added a whole lot to his repertoire, so now he's even more dangerous than he used to be. So now he's peaking with his skill set because he started putting the work in and he kept continuously improving. So he learned something from any loss that he had, which makes him an opponent you want to see. Now, Amanda Nunes, that's going to be a monster fight when she got up with Francesca. That's going to be a great one. But I knew she would dominate this entire sport. Black was before she even fought Ronda Rousey. She was supposed to fight her before, you know, Kaia Holm, what's her name, knocked her out, Holly Holm. Knew that was supposed to happen. But because of all of these things that transpired, the politics kept her out of it. They didn't even market her in the fight with Ronda Rousey when she did. And she was the champion. And they didn't even market her. I'm like, how is that? Y'all market only Ronda Rousey. They was like, and even Joe Rogan thought that was a mistake. Rogan's like, well, there is a lot of us and a strong possibility that we kind of believe she could be the winner of the fight. Still a large amount of people. So you have on the post, she's not even on the pictures of Ronda. One of her in street clothes. Like, she's all dressed up like a model, and the other one, she's in fighting uniform. It's like, this is, like, terrible promotion, because now what if Amanda Nunes wins? And I was like, exactly, and I have her as a huge favorite by stoppage. And sure enough, she won by stoppage immediately. So it tells me that they didn't now end up being her last fight. She never fought again in the UFC.
Yeah, no doubt about that. That was just something that they do from time to time, talking about she's the best women's athlete of all time and all that. I appreciate you calling in, Carson. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say it was worse than that. They had ESPN. They had every sports outlet hooked into Ronda Rousey. She was the top marketed person. And, yeah, everywhere. Putting her in, talking about she could beat Mayweather, all kind of craziness. And she bought the headlines. She thought she was really that good. Mm-hmm. And once reality came crashing down, she realized, I can't do this. I can't go out there and keep getting humiliated like this. She couldn't take it. Mentally, she couldn't. You know, and she's had suicidal thoughts before. Her father took his life. You know, so it's like she has that with her at all times, and she thought about doing that. So her first loss, oh, my God, she got trolled so hard. It was almost no way back for her. She had a towel over her head being escorted out. You know, it was really bad, but now she seems to be at peace you know, she's made her money already, so she don't have to come back. You know,
once she
got
her teeth back, that helped.
Yeah. And then she, now she's having her first kid, I think. So now she's, you know, just actually turned out to be a better person now in retirement than she was when she was actively fighting.
Yeah, that's
that was shocking. Yeah, so it's just about when the hype dies down. Now, for the future of boxing, moving forward, we have got to get these guys off social media and into the ring. Everybody's fighting online. Gosh, the online fighting's been great, but I love to see them fighting in the ring. I mean, every time I'm looking on the boxing websites like Fight Hype and Fight Hub and all, there's all these interviews of these guys calling people out, you know, by name. This never used to happen in interviews. People would refuse to say, you know, I mean anyone, you know who I'm talking to, you know. Now they all, everything's videos now, so they just all calling people out via video. Yeah, and I want him in August, and then in June, I want to fight this guy. And I'm like, wow. They're just calling out people. I'm like, well, they could get this fight done. This shouldn't take them any problems to do, and they just can't get it done. It is amazing that fights are not getting done the way it should be. I mean, now that things are opening up. But I think 2022
yeah, no
will be a much better year. Because a lot of people say, even though the things are opening up, it doesn't mean people are running back out to see the fights and stuff like that or going to packed venues. You know, these fights that we're having, like in Vegas, you know, people are starting to come out too. You know, we want to get the celebrities back out. It's, you know, most people are still kind of like not going out into like mass crowds. Because it's a lot of people that didn't get vaccinated but still don't want to go into large crowds because of it. You know, they don't want to get sick in some type of way. So,
yeah, it's true. It's definitely a process that way. I appreciate you calling in, and we're going to have the show next Monday, just so you know ahead of time, just to give you a heads
okay,
up.
Send me a reminder because I will not miss a
Charlo
post fight.
Exactly.
I will stop. I will have to stop what I'm doing.
And there'll be a little gap between games and stuff too, so I figure it'll be perfect for you. I appreciate you calling in and taking time out, buddy.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm glad I had the time to do it.
Heck yeah. We'll be back. We'll be
back
Monday
for having
me on Charlo post fight.
That's right. We coming back.
All right, buddy. You take it easy. Have a good night. Enjoy the fights.
All right. Good night.
Yes, sir. All right. We're going to get out to Portland in just a second. I did want to – I'm getting a couple of messages on this. Let's clarify this real quick. So Regis Progray – was on the DAZN boxing show, I believe. And there was some quotes from this Everything Boxing handle. It said, Regis Progray on the PBC relationship. I was promised the Barrios fight for that belt, WBA regular. Barrios said he couldn't make 140 and had to go up. Then I heard he was fighting Davis. We already heard about that. And if you had your choice of your Barrios, would you fight to get, you know, someone you could possibly be more famous from, a bigger win as far as celebrity, you know, or money, of course you're going to pick Gervonta. Coming up and wait, whatever. Then he said, we were promised Adrian Broner. None of those promises, Al Haymon, came true. Okay? Now, LRB said, you know, sure would love to see the agreement on this one. Probably needs to check with his team. I can assure you none of this was ever happened. Promised these fights based on what? He fought on one undercard fight, then went and fought with another entity. And by the way, just to clear that up, Regis did say that they were cool with that, him going to that Shriller stuff. Now, Progress has come back out to ESPN. This is Coppinger and he said my comments were taken out of context in the tweets posted online about Al Heyman. In the actual interview, I was frustrated that Barrios and Broner fights never presented themselves. These were just fights that were mentioned that were never materialized. There was no promise made. The truth is, the one fight I worked with on Al, I had a great experience. I never meant to offend anyone, and I apologize if I did. This is an official statement that he just made. Okay, so we kind of know, it's kind of something about nothing, but if it has to do with Al Heyman or a PBC stuff, it's going to be news. But yeah, I mean, he already said that he thought he had a chance to fight Barrios, and Barrios said he was going to 147 until the opportunity with Tank came, which I can understand Barrios in that scenario too, right? So, I mean, it is what it is. It's really not as big of a deal as some people were making it. As far as the rest of the schedule for that undercard, Rolly Romero is actually fighting Anthony Yidget now. At Austin Dulé came out. And a lot of people are actually pumped about that one more, like it was a good replacement. Triller, this is from Coppinger at ESPN now. They said that there's a good chance Triller is planning on October 17th at Bankwest Stadium in Sydney, Australia. Ryan Kavanaugh tells ESPN, but Lopez is, and Ryan Kavanaugh from Triller, one of the main dudes there, of course, but Lopez manager said David McWater says he'd vacate the title rather than fight there. Details on the drama, there was more into it. If we have to, we'll give up the title, and he can fight Isaac Cruz somewhere for $70,000 for that vacant title. One of these guys is an undisputed lightweight champion of the world. The other is a mandatory contender. I don't know when they became equals. No matter who is the known fighter, fair is fair. Lopez needs to go to Australia, should be bending, or Lopez needs to go to Australia. This is Kavanaugh. Lopez needs to go to Australia. Lopez should be bending over backwards to make this right for Kambosos, for us, for all others who lost out due to their irresponsibility. And they feel like they can maybe sell some tickets, yada, yada, yada. But I'll say this, Kavanaugh is talking out of both sides of his mouth with this stuff because he's the one who said they had a sold-out venue. Well, if they had a sold-out venue, guess what? They're not going to Australia. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. But if he wants to make that kind of money, he's going to have to probably go to Australia. Maybe he would lose out, you know what I mean, and just say, screw it, I don't care. Leo Santa Cruz was, this was a handful of days ago. This was on BoxingScene.com. Leo Santa Cruz wants to resume his career at 126, which I think is smart, and fight Gary Russell Jr. in a unification bout because he's got that, I think it's, I don't know which WBA belt, I think it's a super, I'm not sure. I'll probably go down to 126, this is quotes, I still have the title at 126 and would defend it this year. Of course, Gary Russell wants it, I want to fight it. I want the fight, too. Let's make it happen. He wants the fight. I want the fight. Let's tell our teams to talk and make the fight. Because they're both on the same banner and everything, and that would be a great, great fight. Now, there's some talk about that maybe official at DAZN, maybe they're leveraging a possible fight with Golovkin in Canelo instead of Plant. And it sounds like there's some network issues. But this is Lance Pugmire officially tells me that he said DAZN recently reached out to Golovkin to inquire about his availability for a fall fight against Canelo. And Golovkin's response was he's ready and willing when available because that's obviously his big payday. Then they say, officials tell me that the GGG side has no idea if this is leverage for Canelo and Sweet Hands or just checking the stuff. He's also told that he will likely not fight Andre before his plan December 31st with the Murata. There was also some news from Ryan O'Hara. He said, I'm told Canelo plant negotiations have been difficult. DAZN's looking into that Canelo stuff. And he also said it's not plant. It's just the network stuff. And he also said he was told that Canelo doesn't want to fight on pay-per-view anymore, that he'll take the DAZN. Maybe the DAZN upfront money's just bigger. Some other news, Sean Porter said he will announce his next opponent on his podcast tomorrow, which is Tuesday, recording this. Also, a two-fight deal for Joe Smith Jr., which, you know, fighting Umar Salamov would be the first fight October, November, and then he'd fight Daniel Jacobs in the MSG January, February. Both would be on ESPN. The two-fight deal just to fight to get to a Jacobs fight is a little funky to me, but whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever. I mean, I'm not really crazy about that part, but the Jacobs fight, okay. You know, I guess he feels like he's going to go to 175. He hasn't looked good at 168, but I'm not going to shit on the fight. This is more boxing Twitter stuff. Then we'll get to 503 Portland. Let him finish the show. Charlo Castaño, all access. Sleep on Brian Castaño at your own risk. This guy is a lifelong boxer. Beat Spence and Derevchenko in the amateurs, fought Soro 13 fights in, two fights later, fought Lara, two fights later, Teixeira, then went, you know, no honeymoon stuff, went right into it. This is Dougie Fisher. Wow, two official judges really didn't care for Fortuna's style. I thought it was a competitive fight. Congrats to JoJo on his second world title win in his second weight class. So here it is, the Ring guy, the face of Ring magazine, basically, talking about the second world title win in a second weight class, although there's three. We have Undisputed at 135, and there's three belts at 135. Remember the WBA 2 weeks ago and how they said we have Undisputed Taylor and this belt's not a real belt? Well, how's the interim belt interiming off of Haney, who didn't get hurt? And then we all know the real WBC and the Undisputed is Teofimo. But for some reason, the Ring this week did actually went trolling or whatever instead of making it a big deal about the 140. Kind of funny. Fury just can't handle the weight of the crown. Some people just can't stay at the same level when they get to it. Some people think that. Some people do think that. At the end of the day, this is nothing new with Tyson Fury. He's been getting something out of fights his whole career, never, ever defended a title. His whole team is fully vaccinated. That's what they told us. Truth is, Jared Anderson stopped him on his feet in the gym. No way out. A lot of people are alleging that happened. Some real quick news. Casamayor's team received drug testing application from BATA on June 25th and had completed it and returned it to Rachel Donaire by 1:03 on June 26th. That was well within the June 27th deadline that the Donaires did give to him. So when you look at the evidence coming out now, this is interesting because this was her tweet saying you have until midnight, 6:27, approximately 24 hours, to send the paperwork. The full paperwork. And it sounds like, according to VADA now, okay, according to VADA, that they did. David Benavidez has said he'd be willing to try and come down to middleweight to challenge for the WBC belt with Charlo. That would be some balls right there. That would be some balls. Eddie Hearn, you know, is talking about all of a sudden side-talking about the comments. Predicting, you know, the demise of Showtime. This is from a boxing scene. I did expect Showtime to leave boxing because I felt the price point for boxing got too bizarre, the bizarre levels, which DAZN brought in those bizarre levels, by the way, and Eddie. That's why you saw HBO leave boxing. Showtime is certainly not invested in boxing, in my opinion, the same way they once were, which I disagree with that money-wise, but obviously there's still an important network Then he goes on, Showtime's a great platform. I still see Steven Espinosa, you know, Espinosa retweeting stuff. It's kind of bizarre, but he tweets and talks about stuff all the time. Espinosa's a great operator. He has a desire to win. He likes competitive. He's a competitive guy. But it's changed a lot, though. You remember all the PBC fights were on Showtime. Now all these fights are on Fox. I haven't thought too much of Showtime's schedule. Really, because Showtime's got the best schedule in the business this year. And actually, Fox hasn't been getting the best spots on normal Fox. That was 2019. So you should catch up with the times, buddy. All right, let's let Portland close this thing out. Portland, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Mexicano salido de guerra, el acero ha prestado y el bridón, y retiembla en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón.
Yeah, yo, yo, what up, Chris? Yo, I'm doing good here in beautiful Oregon. Sunny today. It's been hot as fuck, but I'm enjoying the weather. But how's everything, Chris? How you doing, bro?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm doing pretty good.
Cool, cool, man. And but yeah, oh, before I get on my my call, I just want to say, what is it, like three weeks now? 3 weeks ago, the fucking Chavez Jr. Anderson Silva fight.
You're breaking up pretty good right now. You're breaking up pretty good. You're kind of
breaking up. Oh, shit, my bad. Hold on. Do you hear me? Am I good?
That's better. That's better.
All right, cool. Yeah, I was going to say, but yeah, that was like 3 weeks ago, the fight, whatever. I just want to mention real fast, Chavez Jr., Anderson Silva. I just think from now on, every year, Chavez Jr. gets a nomination for Pendejo of the Year. Every year from now on, man, and like, it's going to be hard to beat. Points. Hello?
Hello? Yeah, you're breaking up again.
Hello, yeah, but, oh, can you hear me? Hold on.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yo, Chris, you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
It's not breaking up.
Is this better?
It's kind of echoed. It's kind of echoish right now. Maybe it's on my side. I don't know what's going on. Huh.
Is it better? Do you hear me? Clear?
I can hear you right there. Yeah, that's
Is it better or am I echoing? Is it better?
No, you're not echoing anymore. You're definitely not echoing anymore.
Okay, but do I hear you hear me loud and clear?
I hear you.
All right, cool. But I was just saying, Chavez Jr. Versus Anderson Silva. I just wanted to mention that real fast. I think Chavez Jr. from now on, every year is nominated for Pendejo of the Year for, you know, because he just let down boxing, you know, before that Mexicans and then his father. So that's three in a row, man. I think this guy's out, man. I don't know, man. After this, I don't think we should even, it's kind of hard for me even to support him after this, man. I think, I just want to mention that real fast because, like, you know, that was a while back and I just wanted to give my two cents about that because, shit, man, he disappointed La Raza, man, in fucking Mexico. So I just want to mention that real fast. And also, I played the national anthem earlier, and that's for JoJo Diaz, who got the win over Javier Fortuna,
yeah.
Man. Yeah, you know what I mean? I could only be proud. That was such a good fucking fight. This guy, what can I say about JoJo Diaz, man? Like, you know, first, you know, we all know that it was supposed to be Devin Haney, Fortuna, but then, like, COVID happened, right? You know, just a freak accident, freak situation. And then Javier gets the Ryan Garcia, and then he pulls out for, you know, anxiety, if you want to believe that. And then, you know, here comes JoJo Diaz, you know, out of nowhere, goes up and waits to fight this guy. And, what can I do? All I can say is that, man, JoJo Diaz looks like the bigger puncher. He looks like the bigger fighter. Holy crap, he looks like a renewed fighter. I don't know if you saw that, Chris. Like, I just thought he was more sharper. He was just more tougher. And, it would have been way better if he was able to put him away. But, man, there was moments
George Mullins or however it is, he's going to attack, you know. And, man, I can just only be proud for Judge RDS for putting this win, man. And, you know, and actually having
great bounce back, man. Great bounce back performance for him.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. And, this is a new weight class for him, and he looks way better, man. And, in all honesty, too, man, I want to see that Randy Garcia, Judge RDS, I believe what Judge RDS won that intro belt is the same belt that Ryan Gaffney, or I don't know, you know, that makes any sense, but it doesn't make any sense for that. I would be pulling for Jojo Diaz just because I feel like he's the real Mexican. He's the real guy, the full-blooded, you know, full-blooded Mexican here, man. That's all I can say. Ryan Garcia, that excuse of anxiety, I just think it's, to me, in my opinion, it's this boxing. I don't really consider boxing a sport. It's a tough man. It's like a tough man thing, you know. It's just, it's more than sport. It's like, you know, someone could die in the fight. And it's just, I don't know, that's just so much of a little baby excuse. Like, I don't know, it's just, it wasn't, it's not an injury. It's not, I mean, people have their different takes, but I just think that wasn't enough for the fight to be canceled. And, you know, why not just postpone it? Just like I said, JoJo just stepped in there and took this win over everybody. He made Devin Haney, this is my opinion, I want to say, but in my opinion, he made Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, all left bad, like in one night. Both of them left bad in one night. Just, these guys went a different route. So I just want to mention that too, man, because JoJo Diaz deserves respect, and man, I love how he just ran with his win, man. It was just dope. And but yeah, like I said, Ryan Garcia, JoJo Diaz is what I would love next. And also, shout out to Azurdo Ramirez, Gilberto Ramirez. Man, that's a big ass Mexican, man. Holy shit! And I loved how he was able to get him out of there. Sullivan Barrero with the body punch, and man, that was just a good ending to the fight. Azurdo Ramirez representing.
Dude, you're right.
Yeah, he's a
huge,
big man.
Dude.
He looks like a heavyweight.
Goes up in weight and still looks way bigger than his opponent, you know? And Barrero's not small.
Yeah. Nah, he's not small, man. And definitely a player in that game, man. And I would love to see, him challenge Beterbiev. I would love to see him challenge, some bigger names, but Beterbiev would be a big-ass fight for me, man. If he was able to get that one, like, I would be – excited, and if they made that pay-per-view, I would buy that one, so but yeah, like I said, Sullivan Barrero went down. It was nice to see that, it was kind of cool, Mexico versus Cuba, that's kind of a rare fight to happen, so I just want to mention that real fast. And also too, before I get out of here, just want to shout out the senior, before I get out of here, Chavez Senior. I know this was a fight a while back, but man, I just want to say that fight was entertaining. It had its WWE moments, but yeah, hell yeah, bro. Took off the headgear, invited Canelo into the corner. Man, it was worth the pay for you. I loved it, man. I loved it. It was just so sick that Canelo go up there, and it was a big event, dude. This is like with the Mexicans. Definitely stay tuned to that night. You know what I mean? Because I was just seeing that everywhere in my community. So, but also shout out to Jaime Munguia, who got the win. Francisco Vargas, who that was a bad, tough and rugged fight. He lives to fight another day. Charlo Montiel, I know that happened a while back, when Montiel showed balls. Mexican balls, a real gut and blood warrior. I just want to mention that real fast. And also, talk about the Charlo. You got another Charlo fighting this weekend. You already know who I got for the win. I got my boy Castellano. I know he's from Argentina. We're representing Argentina this weekend. Hopefully he gets the win, man. I would love this big-ass upset. But if I could say something, man, I think this is going to be a big, like you and Carcino were saying, like this could be a potential fight, man, like a potential fight of the year. So I would tell definitely the casual fans,
the MMA fans to stay tuned to this one, because this one's going to be fireworks, dude. And so, you know, because, I mean, that Charlo, man, I really like what he's been doing. He's definitely a fucking a real champion. And Castellano is going to have to, you know, upset this guy so to take all those belts. So, but yeah, man. And but as far as that, yo, Chris, I don't have too much to say. Viva Rope Dope Radio and Viva Mexico.
All right, man. I appreciate you calling in. You take it easy, buddy.